Thank you. Please remain standing. I know our student's not here who's leading us in the pledge tonight, correct? Do we have any volunteers? Would this young man like to lead us in the pledge? All right. Mayor Protem.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please be seated. Roll call.
Councilmember Lee.
Here.
Councilmember Nichols.
Here.
Councilmember Peterson.
Here.
Mayor Protem Shaw.
Here.
And Mayor Schultz.
Present. Thank you, Donna. We have no closed session announcements tonight, and at this point, the council will review the order of the agenda as presented by staff. Do any members of the council want to change the order of the agenda?
No.
I would respectfully ask to switch the order of items 7 and 8.
I'll make a motion that we approve the agenda with that revision to move the street project update before the economic development strategy update.
Okay, very good. Is there a second?
Yeah, I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion, there's a second. If there's no additional discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, motion carries. So we are going to proceed with the agenda with the one slight amendment. So let's move on to our ceremonial calendar. We have one item. This is item number one. This is a proclamation designating April 2017 as Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month, and April 8th as Day of the Child. And I do have a proclamation here that I will read. And then, Kayla, are you here for this item? Very good. So let me read this. This is a proclamation of the Grove Beach City Council designating the month of April 2017 as the Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month, and April 8, 2017 as Day of the Child. And it says, whereas the Grove Beach City Council recognizes that every moment in a child's life is important for that child to learn, that the quality of these experiences may determine whether a child succeeds in school and in life, and that all children need caring and loving adults in their lives. And whereas the Month of the Child and the Child Abuse Prevention Month mark a time to recognize that children's opportunities are our responsibilities and to commit ourselves to ensuring that each and every child experiences a high-quality early environment at home, at childcare, at school, and in the community that will promote their optimal development. And whereas April 7, 2017 has been named a countywide Wear Blue Day to raise awareness about the many children in our midst who suffer daily from abuse and neglect. And whereas Saturday, April 8th, 2017, will commemorate Day of the Child at the 39th Annual Children's Day in the Plaza Celebration from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. in the San Luis Obispo Mission Plaza. This year's celebration where children and families will have the opportunity to discover creativity, individuality, diversity, and the arts while exploring community resources. And whereas a variety of other events will provide an opportunity to acknowledge the dedication of individuals and organizations to improve the lives of children and youth in our county and raise the awareness of our community, employers, elected officials of the need to improve the quality, availability, and accessibility of programs supporting children. And whereas, may we remember to listen to and watch the children around us, to have patience, to allow them the opportunity to enjoy the journey of childhood. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Grover Beach hereby proclaims April 2017 as Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month, and April 8, 2017 as a Day of the Child. So we have with us tonight Kayla, is that Bernardo?
Yes.
And Kayla, would you like to make some comments?
Yes. Just wanted to say thank you all so much for your support and the time that you dedicate to our city and our county's children. And I hope that you can continue your support by wearing blue on Friday, April 7th, and today as well.
April 7th.
Every day. And then we hope to see you all at Children's Day in the Plaza on April 8th in Mission Plaza from 10 to 3. Thank you guys so much. And we have some goodies for you and to introduce our special helper to you as well.
So why don't we come around? I'd like to hand this to you and we'll take a photo.
Okay, absolutely.
Right there. We'll meet you up there.
Okay.
Oh, that's hot. Are you good? Yeah, no. That's good. I thought she was pulling it out. Come on.
Perfect. No.
Will you hold that for me?
Yeah. Perfect.
Very good.
right up here. That's our camera. Thank you.
Okay. At this point, we're going to move into public communications. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest in the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in accordance with the Brown Act, we cannot act on any items that are not on the agenda. So is there anyone from the community that would like to address the council on anything that is not on our agenda? Please come forward and state your name for the record.
Don Awise on 1660. I came tonight to ask a question because I know I'm coming to the end of the road. So my son would be taken over. So the city manager and I talked with the chief of police here a while back. So you raised the water rates. Are you going to take and fine us this year after all this rain and all this water? Are you going to do that? Now, I've had trees back there for 60 years. When I came here as a young man, I'd come home from wherever I worked that day, and an old man come up from Santa Barbara and helped me graft them, and now they're dead. So I have to cut them down, regraft them. And I think, and I told him, I thought the city should pay for it. Just like Thanksgiving. And I think that you should go to the insurance, your insurance, and have them to pay for cutting the trees and redoing. That's, you know, it's very sickening to look back there and see those trees dead. When we could have had reverse osmosis, and somebody said the other night, oh, that costs a lot of money. Well, it doesn't, because I went up and down the Mississippi and Ohio rivers before 10 years ago when I first came here and said it. Reverse osmosis. They get grants from the government, and here's two people that can write letters and get the grants and reverse that. They don't have to go in the ocean. That's money, and that just burns me up because I've heard lately at the coffee people saying, well, Grover Beach is raising the water rate. So they get rid of the poor people and make it a rich town. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Weissong. Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, let me close public communication. And city manager, maybe just address the issue of, or maybe you and Greg, on the water regulations and requirements that are in place for now.
I can offer a few words, and then maybe Greg can add to that. We do have conservation rates that are in effect, and the community has conserved a considerable amount of water month after month, year after year, over the last several years. Most recently, we're still at about 30% below where we were a couple of years ago. That is continuing as we go forward. I think the issue of the water conservation targets and fines is something that we will want to go back to the council and engage you on that conversation. In addition to looking at the funding we need to maintain our water system today and to provide funding for capital projects going down the road. So I think that is a conversation we want to come back and talk with the council about. But at this particular moment, there are no changes in the conservation rates or the conservation targets as it stands today.
Okay. Do you have anything you want to add?
Just a couple of minor things. First of all, yes, we have had significant rainfall. Certainly in areas of the state, the drought is over for the year at least, and probably their water supplies have been replenished to the extent that they have several years in outlook. We're not quite there yet. We've seen some recovery in groundwater levels. Lopez Lake is approaching 60% full, which is good, but really we do still need to be careful, continue to conserve. And then as an update with regard to the water conservation requirements, we have in hand proposals for the update to the urban water management plan. And if council recalls the water shortage contingency plan, which is where we find our conservation requirements and our water prohibitions, that is a component of that urban water management plan. So we're poised to award the contract to update the urban water management plan, which will include an update to the water conservation component, which council will have the opportunity then to weigh in on. So it's right in front of us.
Okay, very good. Thank you both. So let's move on to our consent agenda. This is an agenda where we take routine items as a group, and there are, looks like, five items on consent this evening. I'm not going to read them all. Let's see if there's any members of the council that would like to pull any items from consent if you have any questions on any consent agenda item. None?
No.
Okay. Does any member of the public have any questions or comments on consent agenda? Seeing no one come forward, let's see if there's someone prepared to make a motion on these items.
I can go ahead.
Go ahead.
I'll go ahead and make a motion that we approve the consent agenda as published.
I'll second it.
Okay, very good. There is a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, this is a roll call vote.
Councilmember Lee.
Yes.
Councilmember Peterson.
Yes.
Councilmember Nichols.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Shaw.
Yes.
And Mayor Scholz.
Yes. Let's see. We have no public hearing items tonight, and we are going to move into item number 8, which is the street project update. City Manager, were you going to do an introduction, or Mr. Ray, are you going to give the staff report on this?
I'll just say briefly that what's before the council tonight are two different, very significant, high-priority items, both the street project update and the draft economic development strategy. And I'll just say that about a week and a half ago, the council identified economic development and streets as two of the highest priorities, arguably the two highest priorities identified for the city for this next year. And so we're very pleased to be able to bring these two items for you tonight that show what we're doing to help carry out those high priorities. So for tonight on the streets, we'll be sharing an update on our current work, where we're going over the next year, and get some council input and direction on some key areas. We also have Dave Mullinex from the League of California Cities, who can offer some perspective on the statewide level as well.
Okay, very good. Mr. Ray.
Great. Thank you, Honorable Mayor and City Council. As City Manager Bronson has identified, this is the street project update. We'll jump right in. First of all, let's talk about our completed projects. With the Measure K funding approved in 2014, which included a total of $48 million of bond funds, $5 million of bonds were issued in 2015, $8 million in 2016, and the first three projects are complete. The map behind me in red shows the streets that have been completed so far. That represents 84 blocks, or over 7 miles of streets, and we're basically 20% of the streets completed. And then I'll remind council that in addition to the Measure K funded streets, we did complete the North Oak Park rehabilitation. The projects that are currently in design, which is designed for the $8 million bond issuance, those projects should, or this design effort should be complete here in actually just a couple days. We're already advertising for bids, and the plans are in-house. So we're just taking one last look at the plans, and the streets included in that are 3rd Street, Long Branch Avenue, Mentone, Newport, North 16th, South 8th, South 13th, Stinson. That was it. I jumped ahead. And then if you look on the map behind me again, the light blue streets are those streets that are just completing design and will be going into construction. And that's also in your staff report as an attachment. The schedule, again, we expect the design is in-house. I believe it to be complete, but we're giving it one last look through. So looking at the schedule for the project, we're anticipating we'll be opening bids on April 26th, awarding a contract May 15th. In late June, we'll start preliminary work, and I want to highlight that a little bit. You know, this is a big project. It's pushing $8 million in street rehabilitation. There's a lot of work that has to be done before the paving operation actually begins, and that includes work on new curb gutters and sidewalks and street trees that have to be trimmed or pruned back. It's some new storm drain work and some water and sewer upgrades. In mid-August, we would expect actual paving work to start. It could happen sooner than that, but we're, you know, allowing a reasonable amount of time at this stage in estimating the contractor's schedule. Also, in mid-May, we anticipate that we'll be the design on Long Branch from South 3rd to 13th Street will be complete. That is trailed behind. It was awaiting input from council and the community on street narrowing options. And we have some options. We might be able to change order that work into the existing contract, so that it would be a seamless project, or we could just simply bid it as a separate project, depending on the timing and how that works out. And then the spring to summer time period, we'll be moving into the new Port Avenue workshops on street narrowing options. If you recall, we're working with a public outreach firm that will be doing the clicker surveys and a series of workshops to engage the community on options for new Port Avenue. These two street sections that are sort of trailing behind the remainder of the 2016-1 K-14 work are shown here in red. Again, they're Long Branch from 3rd to 13th and Newport Avenue from 3rd to Oak Park. The green streets shown on this map behind me were the streets identified by City Council for the next bond-funded project. This represents 101 city blocks in total, and assuming that we get to this point and complete these projects, we'll have over 50% of the city streets done at this time. And I do have a list at the end of my slides if council needs to reference that later. So, we have the estimated cost of the construction cost of the current project and design to be approximately $6.8 million. As I mentioned, Long Branch and Newport are trailing behind, but the anticipation is that those projects would use the remainder of those funds. If there were any additional funds that remained, though, council would have the option to identify initial priorities from the 2017-1 list. That's the streets I just showed in green. And we could, if funds remain for that, we could identify and work on those projects immediately. And then, of course, the remainder of this roughly 101 blocks of streets, council will need to begin considering an additional bond issuance. Looking at major road rehabilitation, we can't forget that our major roads are out there. They're not funded by Measure K. Those include South Oak Park, West Grand Avenue, 4th Street, Farrell, El Camino, and the Pike. We do have a capital improvement project, CIP 2283, that identifies $450,000, and that has been earmarked for South 4th Street between Farrell and Seabright. In the 2017-18 proposed budget, there are $280,000 in gas tax funds and $240,000 of general funds being earmarked, but not allocated yet, for additional major street rehabilitation. At this point in time, staff is not aware of any state or federal grant funds that will help us. Oak Park was kind of the last of the last of grant funding available for street work. However, we are aware that there are bills in both the Senate and Assembly. There are similar transportation bills being pushed forward. Governor Brown has also identified a $4.5 billion per year budget request for infrastructure funding. And so we're being optimistic that, you know, some of this funding will come our way. There's also an effort by the League to develop a single transportation bill by April 6th. That's coming up pretty soon. And that bill has the potential to bring $452,000 per year to Grover Beach. And council may wish, at this point in time, given the lack of grant funding and federal and state funding for roadway improvements, council may wish to consider lobbying legislators or the governor for approval of one or more of those bills. Staff is aware that the public at large has had some concerns over the speed at which these projects are progressing. I would remind council that this is the largest design project ever contemplated by the city, and I will say short of the Grover Beach Lodge project, which is still ahead of us. But we're in design of over $8 million worth of streets, and it's a big project. It takes a long time to get a project like that out on the streets, but it's a very aggressive way of going about it, and that is to do it all at once, go and have a huge project happen all at once, and hopefully it offers us some cost savings. But we are aware that the information that the public needs to understand that has not necessarily made it to the streets. The current public communication effort is entirely staff-driven, and it's a limited information campaign based primarily on our city website, a handful of press releases, and our Facebook account. So some options council may want to consider would be to hire additional staff to focus on public outreach for this and other public outreach efforts, or perhaps we could contract with a public outreach firm for additional communication on road work. Another item that's out there that, again, on this topic of public information, the city staff is engaged in a very aggressive pothole patching program. There are two paving companies out there working a couple days a week, as well as staff filling potholes. That's a lot of work going on at once. And unfortunately, though, the rainfall has exacerbated our street deterioration, so the potholes are popping up about as fast as we can fill them. We've expended $120,000 so far in pothole patching. And that's just since the end of the rains, since the rains lightened up, we had some periods where we could work in between about a month ago. And so we've done work on 26 streets so far. So at this point, very short staff report. Staff is seeking council input and direction on the status of Major K-funded projects, major road improvements, and public information efforts. With that, I'll turn it back to council for questions and comments.
Thank you, Mr. Ray. See if there's any questions. Jeff, do you have any questions?
I do, and thank you for the staff report, and thank you, and I'm sure the community thanks the city for the $120,000 of pothole repairs and that work that has started. However, my questions are going to be a little bit rough. So, so how is it that the design isn't done but we're out to bid?
Well, we advertised. We want to get the information out there as quickly as possible. We advertise. It usually takes 1 or 2 days for contractors to begin requesting the plans, so we know we have a couple days. So we were very aggressive in getting it out this week. If we would have waited too much later, it wouldn't have made the papers in time. So we very aggressive schedule trying to get this project out to bid as quickly as possible. I've seen the plans before. We've seen the specifications. This is just a kind of a one last look over before we actually send them to the plan room for publishing.
Okay, so I appreciate the aggressiveness. Again, however, so I feel like I've misunderstood where we were, because the direction and the information that we had been provided is that we were going to be under construction by March, April, almost no later than May, and now I'm hearing June. So, point blank, what happened?
The schedule has slid somewhat. It's a pretty large project. In particular, I think the engagement with Long Branch Avenue, if council recalls originally, our intent was to include Long Branch in the original design effort. And so that had the effect of slightly stalling the original design effort. We did separate that from the main focus of the project in order to get back on track to the extent that we could. But it is a very large design effort, and it, you know, slightly behind schedule.
Okay. So then what's the status of how we fix it going forward? I realize that June is now the target date based upon these plans. However, as we move forward with future phases of this, the council has discussed on-call engineers to develop plans for smaller chunks so that we're not doing an $8 million project all at once, and so we can have design going on while construction's going on and design going on while construction's going on. Can somebody give me an update on where that formula stands?
Yes, that is staff's intent moving forward, is to have a series of smaller projects designed and on hand and available as funding presents itself and as timing presents itself, so that we have a more consistent stream of projects moving forward. We are currently one staff member short, and we're awaiting our capital project manager's return next month, actually a month and a half out, which will help us get back on that schedule. Currently, we're sort of in a holding period waiting for her return. But the intent is to move forward aggressively with not quite as large of projects as the next bond funding becomes available.
And so being one staff member short, what's the status of the consultant who's been helping us up to this point with the road program? So is he still, or is that group still in line and still working? And
yes, still working and still focused at this point, focused entirely on the 2016-1 project,
which is the one that's about to be out to bid.
The one that's out to bid, yes.
Okay. Okay. That's what I have for now.
Okay. Barbara?
No.
Debbie?
No questions. Well, perhaps I think I know the answer to this, and I think it's perhaps where we've been trying to go, but are there any projects at all that we could get moving on now? Is there anything that's designed and ready to go?
There is not.
Okay.
Okay. Miriam?
Yeah, I have a couple. I just want to make sure I understand. One area where you talk about the communication, I think that's really important. And I know we can't use a lot of resources or time. Would, once construction does get going again, hopefully in June, would we be able to do a robocall out to people or something like that? Would that be appropriate? Sometimes I just feel like when we put things on websites, people just don't see, or even the newspaper. I don't know if that would be something possible.
I think that's an idea that could be looked into by staff. I'm not sure whether or not we have that availability to us or not, but I think that's something we could certainly look at. Okay. Is alternate forms of getting information out.
Okay. And also just the neighborhood app that a lot of people are on now, that would be a low cost also, maybe. I just want to make sure when I explain this to other people that I'm understanding. If I could look at your map again of all the streets. So the dark blue are complete. The light blue will be design complete by March and begin construction by June. And then the green are possibly going to be, could begin construction by August. Is that?
No, that's not correct.
No, okay.
The green streets, there is currently no funding for.
No funding.
They're the council's identified next priority streets.
Okay, so green is future. You had on there something construction in August. Was that Newport or?
There is an August date up there, and I think that's, jumped a little too far there. There we go. That's the mid-August start paving. So,
begin construction in June, but then start paving right. By August. I understand.
We get that question a lot. You know, okay. We're not paving. Well, there's a lot of preliminary work that has to be done before the paving begins. Okay. So
this summer, more than likely, it's going to be the dark blue streets, and then we have to look at funding on the green streets. From there.
That is correct.
Okay. That's all I have for now.
And just if I can add to that, one of the points that Greg mentioned was we are looking for some examples of high priority streets among those 105 street segments on the 2017 list so that we can begin some initial design work now to get those shovel ready faster than the whole bucket of streets to meet the interest of tightening the gap between design and construction so it's not one gargantuan project coming forward next year, but we can do some minor projects first so that there's a continual flow of construction projects going forward. And that's one of the other improvements that I think we will be making in reflection of council's interest in tightening that gap.
And could I ask one more question just
sure.
Based on that? So I know, I mean, it's an awesome statistic that when all marked streets in there are done, it'll be 50% done, but it's looking like the green ones may take a little longer. I mean, what percentage of completion would you say, you know, between the dark blue and the light blue, are we looking at about, what, 30%, 35%?
That's about right.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Okay. So let me first begin by saying I appreciate the public communications piece, but I want to make sure to underscore that we are the community's representatives, and when we see nothing, the streets are not getting done, then I start raising the flags, and I know I've heard from a lot of people in the community, so I want to make sure that we are not going to put money into something. We need action. Bottom line, we need action. So when's the last time, and Jeff, I know you, Jeff talked about his comments being rough. I want to put add a little emphasis. So when is, and I know staff, I know we have a lot of projects going, and I know we've got limited resources, but I think we had hired Canon due to design. Canon's a rather large firm, so why has it taken Canon so long? Newport aside, why has it taken Canon so long? It seems like they've been working on these streets for at least 3-4 months tops. So do we know?
I actually can comment on that. Yeah, this is a large design project. I think 3-4 months is pretty aggressive schedule for that significant of a project.
Okay.
You have to recall this involves utility investigation, individual, there are encroachments and individual improvements in front of every single property on every single street. There's street narrowing, there's, you know, soils investigation, survey work. It is a big project. It's a big design effort.
So you have something you want to add?
Actually, I do. I think, as I understand as well, once we hired the construction manager to also provide their review, they did a constructability review on Canon's design, which is a practice that we do try to have to make sure we have a third party making sure the design meets the expectations. And there were some questions that came up in the process that required some additional conversation to make sure we get this right before it goes out to bid for the construction process. So I think that added some additional time that we did not foresee early on, but has helped in getting this completed by the end of March.
So here's another one of my biggest concerns, and it's turned into a huge frustration. We've repeated what we did the first time. We put a lot of streets in one series, and it takes a long time to design them, and we said we were going to break this out into chunks that were a little more manageable. So when are we going to take best practices learned and not be in this situation to where we're talking 6 months, 7 months to design streets? So I just, we had talked about this at a council meeting. I think that's where I'm getting to the point of we need to take action. And I know we've been working hard on other things, but the streets are a priority. So when is the last time we worked on a street? An actual, not potholing, actual rehabilitation on the street.
Probably last fall?
Yeah, fall. I would say fall. Our last street project was completed early fall.
And in all practicality, what I've seen in the past, and I know you've been saying we're going to start in June, but be under construction in August, is we go through this process, you design the streets, they go out to bid, we select the bidder, then they have... You got to get them under contract, which it takes time. And then they usually have 30, 45 to 60 days of prep work and getting ready to work. So are we even going to be under construction in August this year, or is it really closer to September?
No. Well, this schedule is accurate. Going back to the, let's see what we got here. Going back to the schedule, we'll award the contract in May, and then we'll start preliminary work in late June.
Okay, we've been through this before. I understand. When are people going to see them working on actual pavement?
That is not until August.
Okay. I guess the one thing I would ask is as we go forward, if you are writing these specs, the successful bidder, you should give them less time. Hopefully we can trim some time off of that. Maybe they don't take 60 days to mobilize and get everything out there. Is that an element that we control?
It's an element we control. We've actually reduced it to 30 days.
Okay.
It's a pretty aggressive schedule. They have to order materials, complete their bonding, order materials, schedule, get right-of-way clearances, things like that. So there's a lot of work that occurs in that 30 days. That's pretty aggressive.
Okay. And so tonight, depending if the council gives direction that says And I know you pulled out, you talked about, you designated Long Branch and Newport, but it was pretty clear to me, and I thought the council, that when we had this conversation, they were both unique designs. And so when we talked about Long Branch and we talked about Newport, there seemed to be a pretty quick consensus amongst the folks who lived on Long Branch and who were involved, and we felt we could move quicker on that, and I think we're doing that, but I want to talk more about the time frame on that, and that Long Branch or Newport required more analysis and more discussion. So you were talking about we have a chance to hold up the rest of the street to add Long Branch, or add Long Branch as a bid alternate?
So not to hold up any work that's moving forward, to simply continue with this schedule as shown on the screen behind me. But when we complete the design of Long Branch, which is coming in 4 or 5 weeks, we're estimating 6 to be, you know, safe and make sure we have a fair estimate. But as soon as we get that design and we think it's biddable, one option would be to simply issue a change order to the contractor.
Okay, and can you, what are the pros and cons with respect to doing it on its own, a separate bid?
I think the pro is that we actually might get better bids. A contractor who has an existing contract has really no motivation to give you great prices on an added item of work. The con of going out to bid separately is that, as you just mentioned earlier, it does add a series of sort of stipulated time frames into that work. So that could push that even further back.
Okay. So let me change to the major road rehabilitation. I think you had talked about, we had, looks like, what, $450,000, and was that the combination of gas tax and other sources? And then you said it looks like there was $240,000 that had been budgeted but not allocated. Was I tracking right on that?
Yes. So for this fiscal year, we have $450,000 for the completion of South 4th.
Okay.
And then proposed for next fiscal year, $280,000 in gas tax and $240,000 in general fund.
Okay, so it looks like around $500,000. It's $520,000. Okay. And that's, so then depending on what direction is given, we'll have to see if we can augment those amounts. Can you touch on, I know in the staff report, and you didn't mention it tonight, maybe briefly, was some of the streets we know are taking time because there are some water infrastructure that needs to be upgraded. I think that's the case with North 16th, South 13th, and I'm not sure of some of the others. So where are we at that on those numbers?
I can kind of give you an idea by cost. If I recall the numbers correctly, it was about $150,000 in sewer line upgrades are included in this project, and then almost $350,000 worth of water line upgrades are included in this project. And then, of course, other utilities, gas, electric, cable TV, phone, have all been alerted, and we're anticipating primarily the gas company will be doing some upgrades to their older lines.
Okay, and then you anticipate coming back to the council for a budget adjustment, or how are we moving forward with, looks obviously the $150,000 on sewer, looks like we have the resources, but the water is a challenge, correct?
The water could be a challenge. That's a discussion. We've just received the plans and the final cost estimates, so that number, we had anticipated a sizable amount of waterline work. The number's a little higher than we anticipated, so we'll be having a staff discussion on how to address that, and we may be coming back for additional funds.
Okay, because I see on the CIP 2295 streets that are for this year, North 16th and South 13th are in those, and so is that a potential holdup, or is that something we need to get resolved sooner than later?
I think it's something we need to resolve soon.
Okay.
I had another question when you're free.
Okay, why don't you have on this topic?
On this topic.
Okay, go ahead and ask your question.
You got me thinking on it. How long is it going to take us to do this total project, this $8 million project, once you get started in June?
I wouldn't be surprised if it was 6 to 8 months total.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking about the sidewalks on South 10th, and I'm thinking about Long Branch from 9th to 13th, and I wanted to look again, but we're doing some work on South 13th. I think it's critical that I think it's critical, and I'm asking, is it possible for us to do that during the summertime or during the Christmas holidays so we're not obstructing kids going to school? This is the year, this is the month of the child. So I'm thinking about the children and their parents trying to get back and forth to South Grover Elementary.
In particular, you're talking about the street work?
The street work, and aren't we doing some sidewalk work on South 10th Street?
Some sidewalk work, yes. Mm-hmm. I think it would be challenging to move the schedule around to try to take advantage of breaks in the school schedule. I think it could be done, but that's not the way the project's currently laid out. So if that's council's direction and council would like to consider that, I think we can take a look at that and bring back more information to see how that might be done.
Okay.
So then I want to move to your statement regarding, so we're talking major roadways, and obviously there is no money coming from the state. I believe Measure J was a measure that did fail. And so what are our, and I know Dave, Mr. Mullinex is here from the League of California Cities, so maybe I'll bring Dave up and you can maybe kind of give us an update on where we are with, if there's any potential help from the state on the major streets, not the K-14 street. So.
Yes, great to be here in Grover. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. For a change, I have some good news, potentially. As pointed out, last year, for major road work around California, there's been studies that have shown that California as a state is about $70 billion in arrears as far as road rehabilitation and paving. Last year, we tried to put together a package, and we were part of a coalition called Fix Our Roads Now, which was a coalition of labor, business, and transportation, cities and counties from around the state. Now, in order to put together a package that would generate the type of revenue that would meet the challenges and needs that we have in our communities, we're talking we would need to generate about $6 to $7 billion a year, which would require tax increases. Some of the tax increases would be at the gas pump and some increases for VLF and some other taxes. It's kind of in the weeds, but it takes a 2/3 vote in the legislature. So you need 2/3 in the assembly and 2/3 in the Senate. And there just wasn't the stomach or the spine during election year last year in order to get it done. So this year, after a lot of editorials, we've done press conferences around the state with local elected officials and business leaders around the state. We've gotten some very favorable editorials from around the state as well. The governor, along with the president of the Senate, Kevin De Leon, and Anthony Rendon, and the assembly, have come together, unlike last year, and really have thrown their weight into the fray and are trying to put together a package that would generate $6 billion a year for in perpetuity for California cities and counties and state highways. Now, of the $6 billion in SB1, AB1, $2.2 billion of that would go to cities and counties. And you have a spreadsheet in front of you that would show Grover Beach would start out with a little over half a million in the first year with some loans being paid back. And then from there on, you'd get about $450,000 a year, and that is in perpetuity. Now, the governor's approach is slightly less. It's $4.5 billion a year, again, with some tax increases, a little less. But there's a 10-year sunset on that, so it would generate $45 billion over 10 years, and then it would sunset. Now, in the governor's proposal, that would be $1.4 billion for local instead of the $2.2 billion. So the number for $450,000 for Grover would probably be almost half of that. Now, also in addition, the county of San Luis Obispo, the county roads, would get about $13 million a year. And again, under the governor's proposal, it would be about half that. And again, the governor's proposal sunsets where SB1 continues on in perpetuity. Now, again, it requires a two-thirds vote, and there's always a lack of courage up there when we're talking about tax increases. And so we need to make sure that we are communicating clearly to our elected officials up there in Sacramento. Two-thirds vote on anything is challenging, and two-thirds vote to get tax increases is incredibly challenging. Now, the league and the counties and the leadership up there and some business leaders on Friday and today were in nonstop meetings trying to pull together this package because they did set a deadline of April 6th to pull this all together so that we can move on to other priorities such as housing and homeless issues and whatnot. So we have about 2 weeks to communicate to our legislators in no uncertain terms of our needs of our cities and communities of to pass SB 1. So I would, again, encourage and urge the city of Grover Beach to, again, I've sent out the sample letters. Please get those letters into our elected officials, Assemblymember Jordan Cunningham and Senator Bill Monning, to, again, support SB 1. I would also encourage you, any people out there in your community, to also call or email your elected officials to say, please support SB 1, because we need the higher funding that SB 1 provides and the continual funding that SB 1 provides. And again, even with the continual funding, the higher rate, still it barely keeps us even where we really need to be as far as a state. And again, communities like yourself that have gone out and done elections for bond measures, you're to be commended. A lot of cities are struggling with this around the state and around the Tri-County area, which I represent. The other thing that, as far as the county, fell heartbreakingly short of a half-cent sales tax measure because, again, it needs two-thirds vote. There's a bill called ACA 4, which would drop that threshold from a two-thirds vote to a 55%, like is what is required for school bonds. This bill, for a long time, has been sitting up in Sacramento, again, unable to move forward. But for the first time, because of some of the changes in seats up there in Sacramento, it has a real chance. And what would happen is if ACA 4 passed, again, requires a two-thirds vote, it would go on to the ballot in June or November of 2018. And if passed, then in the county of San Luis Obispo could put another measure on the ballot for countywide, which generates a lot of money for cities and counties, for roads, and you would only require a 55% vote to pass that. So again, I would be happy to answer any questions. Things are moving very fast up there in Sacramento, and we need to make sure we get our message out in a really coordinated and coherent fashion and need to get that message out very soon. So I would, again, encourage you to send a letter. And I would encourage any and all of you to make a phone call up to Sacramento to both Jordan and to Senator Monning as well. Again, encouraging them to support SB 1. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mullenix. Don't go very far and see if anyone has any questions for Dave. Anyone have questions? Jeff?
I just have a quick question. Thanks, Dave, for that presentation. What's the difference between SB 1 and AB 1, or have they been reconciled to effectively be SB 1?
They are. That is the overall goal, is to reconcile those into it. The differences are very minimal. It's kind of into the weeds as far as one would phase in the increases at the tax pump, one would automatically all at once increase the gas tax. And there are a couple other things that are really into the weeds as far as it's called a true-up payback. I could spend 10 minutes trying to explain it to you, but nobody would really be that interested. But it's very minimal difference between AB and SB 1. And what they are trying to do is, as you pointed out, trying to reconcile those so it could be just one vehicle to vote on.
So do we send a letter of support for AB 1 to both Cunningham and Monning?
Correct.
Or just Cunningham?
No, both.
Both for both?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Okay. And again, phone calls, at this point in the game, because we're talking about very, very short time frame here, phone calls are every bit as important, if not more so than, especially from elected officials. Yeah. And again, from your community as well, SB 1, and that's all you need to say, I support SB 1, please support SB 1.
Great. Any questions, Mari?
I had a question. If we do get this funding, for example, our K-14 funds are limited to residential streets. Some of the grants we get are limited to certain streets. How would this funding be limited, or would we have freedom to use it where we needed to
use
it.
Yes, that $450,000 a year would be to your discretion.
Okay.
Right into the general fund.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Great to see you.
Okay. Let me open this up to the public and see if anyone has any comments on the item before the council. Please come forward. State your name for the record.
Hello. My name's Sharon Corcoran, and I live on Carmelde Lane and First in one of those big potholes. So just for clarification for our cul-de-sac, because we kind of do this as a group. In fact, you can talk to your police chief. We worked very well with him on getting the drug house off our corner a couple years ago. So when you say you're out of money, we voted a $48 million bond. So when you say you're out of money for the green streets, what does that mean?
Let me take all of your testimony, okay. And then I promise we'll answer that question.
Okay, so sound that's good? Just one question. So when we see that our whole area is on the no money left list, what does that really mean? Because we all voted for the bond, and we kind of want to know where our share is, because we seriously have significant, I mean, we try going around to Front Street, coming around that way, but it's just awful. And I think our neighborhood group would be not real happy to see more money being spent on staff to get community words out. I like the kind of robocall idea. Maybe the contractor can, I mean, they're out there in the streets where the people are. Maybe they can have some sort of a poster up or the little standard things or something, letting people know. So just, I think there's lower tech, less expensive ways than spending money that we could use on streets. I know it's different monies, but to see money spent on staff instead of the streets, I think is a real frustration for people. So that's it. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Is there anyone else?
Johnny, what's on? I didn't vote for it because the renters aren't going to pay for it, and so taxpayers are paying for the paving the streets. Am I wrong or not? And so a lot of people thought we was going to get $48 million, bang, bang, and we're going to pave the streets. It's not working that way. And then they decided, well, certain streets. Well, North 16th is the worst one in town as far as I'm concerned because I drove over for several years. And I got flat tire on a pothole. I've spilt beverages, taking them to my wife, trying to. But now then, I take 13th and just go up and Brighton. But Brighton from 16th to Oak Park should have never been paved. It should have been 16th. So I don't know how they did that. I never did understand that. Because from 16th on Brighton to Oak Park was as good as this carpet. But 16th was bad. And it's been held back. I don't get that. And then on Oak Park, I don't know when that's going to have crosswalks, but you go on 4th Street, every cross street has double crosswalks. And then at the top up there, I think it's Atlantic, has the light for it. If 4th Street has to have crosswalks, which it's had for years, then I think up there at Newport and Brighton should have crosswalks and lighted too, because those people come down flying. And I use it every day for 40, 60 years, so I know what I'm talking about. So I think there should be crosswalks up there and soon, so people can walk, especially at the church. They have real problems getting across there. And I don't think it's right for them to suffer. I really don't. And for you people here, you're elected by the people for the people, for their safety, I thought. I learned that in a one-room school.
Was anyone else? So let me close it, bring it back. So let me answer the first question. So the streets down here that are shown in green, it's not that we're out of money. So to this point, the council has authorized the issuance of $13 million, which is done in one $5 million bond, one $8 million bond. So $13 million of the $48 million. So those are the streets that are targeted for improvement. We would either need to reprioritize or issue another bond. So there would be funds to do those streets. So it's that's kind of some of the direction that we're going to give staff tonight, is that if Newport can't be worked out, we may have an opportunity to do some of the streets like Ocean View, which leads into our Carmaldi and First Street. So that's a discussion. So we're not out of money. It's just a matter of having to go back out and issue bonds. And once we do that, how long does that process take, Greg, typically, or Matt? You guys can tag team it.
I don't have the specifics tonight, and Gayla had a family matter. It's fairly efficient. I mean, we go out in the market, we get the funds in place, and then we begin to implement the projects.
So basically, I think it took actually less than 6 months, didn't it?
It was about 3 months.
Yeah, I was going to say three, but I didn't want to err on the side. So it's a matter of going back out and issuing more bonds, not adding to the $48 million. So just think of this. The $48 million is the max, and we're about right here. We're about a third of the way. And that's why, you know, we're trying to get to a point where if we can get half of the streets done for less than $28 million, then we will actually have been pretty efficient in updating the streets and making that, stretching your money, our money, further. Okay, so those streets will be done. It's just a matter of the timing. We're going to have a discussion tonight, and hopefully you'll have a better answer on the timing of those before you leave the council chambers tonight.
You, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but when you talk about issuing bonds, I think that's confusing because we think we voted in a $48 million bond. So then you're not saying we have to go out and vote again. You're just saying that we issue another chunk of money.
That is right.
Okay. Of that $48 million bond we voted.
Yeah. I saw heads shaking up and down. I think they understood.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Yeah. Sounds good. With respect to North 16th Street, that is on the list to be done this year, but we've got substandard water line and other infrastructure, which is why it could not have been done in the first series, correct, Mr. Ray?
That is correct.
Okay. So are we all clear? We don't need to go back to the voters to vote. You've already said you've authorized us to issue up to $48 million, and we've only gone to $13 million. Okay.
I think, right. Could I add something to that?
Sure.
One thing that I know people are probably saying, well, if you need to issue it, just issue it. One reason we have to think carefully about when we issue and how much we issue is because that is then reflected in everyone's property tax bill. So if we issued, for example, all $48 million tomorrow, everyone's property tax bill would shoot much higher than expected or promised. So that's why we take it very carefully and use all the money before bonding again.
And there's no practical way we can do all the streets at once. You can see we're struggling with eight street segments because of, I'm going to leave it at that. So I think at this point, let's have some discussion. Let's give staff some direction. And who's all taking notes? Because I want to make sure that we give clear direction. We can't keep coming back and going over these things. So the list of streets that are going out to bid. Can you put table one back up, Greg? So it's basically with the exception, it's all these streets with the exception of Long Branch and Newport, correct?
With the exception of really portions of Long Branch and Newport. Portions of them actually are getting paid for this project that's going out immediately. It's the middle portions, these two, these here that you see, that are in the design. Well, one is in the public outreach process, that's Newport, and then the other one is in the design that's slightly behind the current project design.
Okay, so let me try this one more time. You guys are sending it. We're going to send some streets out to bid. Like, it's advertised, and you're talking about it in 2 weeks. What's going to be in that package?
That will be 3rd Street from Long Branch to Northern City Limits. Long Branch, not Long Branch. Mentone from 4th to Eastern City Limit. not Newport. North 16th from West Grand Avenue to Atlantic. South 8th from West Grand to Farrell. South 13th from West Grand to Farrell. And Stinson Court.
Okay. So that's what's going out. So now, Long Branch Avenue is being designed because you had come back and got direction from the council. And you're saying it looks like we can have that done by May,
yes.
For, ready for issuance?
I think that's a safe bet to say May, yes.
Okay. And then you said there was an outside opportunity that we could fold that into the others. I just don't see how that works without slowing the work down. So convince me otherwise. So I think where I'm trying to go with this is I think we've got a set list of streets that we know for sure are going out and going to be bid on that will be under construction. You'll be doing some of the preliminary work or curb and gutter or some of the in June, but actual people won't see pavement until August, correct?
That's correct. I mean, it'll be the utility work. They'll be digging up the street for water lines and sewer lines. A gas company will be out digging up the street for gas lines. Then followed right behind will be the concrete crews building curb gutters, wherever there's new sidewalk going in. That'll all be going. And then right behind them will come the big grinding machines, if you recall last project. And that's when the real work, the fun part begins.
Okay, so let me talk to the council on this. With respect to Long Branch, what is the desire of the council? Is that to get that street designed and have it be included as a alternate bid package with the streets going forward, or are we okay with that being that going out on its own, or if there's another variation?
I've got a potential variation to that, but I'm okay with it going out on its own. For that question, I'm okay with it going out on its own.
So Long Branch would be a separate.
I support that. I'm sorry.
You good?
Well, I support it because I think that if it were possible, at least for a couple of blocks of it not to be done until, I see that it doesn't go to 13th, but that up, say, 8th to 10th, to wait until there's a school break would really be wise. So if it goes out on its own, I think we have more flexibility in asking for that.
Yeah, and the portion in front of the school from 10th to 13th is already done.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so it's really just 8th to 10th.
Yeah. Okay. You guys okay with that? Barbara, you good?
Yes.
Yeah. How could you explain again how exactly then that would affect the timeline? Would that make Long Branch be completed? It would just be completely addressed at a later time.
Yeah, but under construction, the goal of it being under construction this year, being designed at a different timeline.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, I'd be fine with
that. I think we're good on that. So then the question really comes down to Newport. And I know you're talking about having workshops this spring or summer, and we're not even sure what the success of that will be as to when you can get to the point of designing Newport. So the question then becomes to this council, are we okay doing the spring, summer, just the workshops for street narrowing options, and then later coming in, obviously, based on what comes of those workshops, then there's authorization to design. So, and I have to say, as I run the timeline out, I just don't know how we could have significant portions of Newport under construction this year. So, but Greg, can you clarify?
I think that's a reasonable concern, and I don't think you will have sections of Newport under construction this year for possibly two reasons. One, just looking at the timing. If we're engaging the community in the spring and summer time frame, coming back to council for one or more meetings to make final decisions, going to design, going through the bidding process, you know, getting it out to construction, I really think you're looking at next year. And then sort of wrapping back around to the funding. I don't think you're going to see funding remaining in the current bond issue. So it'll be a project you'll need to consider either as it relates to those, what I'll call the green streets, if I can. Let's see if I can get those right. There we go. The green streets, it'll be sort of in the fray with the decision about those streets.
So, I think everyone in agreement with, I think, definitely doing the workshops this summer, and then we'll have to figure out the timeline with Newport. So then the question becomes, what is the estimated cost for construction of Newport? Is there an opportunity to take the dollars that were identified for Newport this year and put those on Ocean View, First Street, and some of the streets that are west of 4th Street?
I don't believe so. I don't think the funding for Newport is there, to be honest with you, given the current cost estimate of the streets that are going out to bid and the remainder of Long Branch. I don't believe you'll see funding for Newport even available. So not doing Newport is not putting funding in front of you.
Okay.
But I think this, and again, the design estimate numbers have fluctuated given the extent of this project. So a couple months ago, we told you there'd be $1 million, $1.5 million in savings. That's not what we estimate today. 2 months later, with further information, we now are estimating, based on actually information today we just got from Canon, that we're now kind of right approaching the $8 million mark overall, including the $1 million for Long Branch, given the design the council authorized us to go forward and pursue. Now, when we go to construction bid, that's where we'll be able to, I think, really see if there's any additional savings coming out of that. But there may not be much for Newport this year as part of this particular bond package based on what's coming out through this process.
Okay. Well, that's not what I remember from the previous meetings, but okay. So what you're telling us is put the table back up, please. So with the exception of Newport, every street listed up there we can do within the $8 million that we have in the bank right now. Is that what I'm hearing?
With the exception of Newport, Long Branch I still don't have a cost estimate on, so I'm not 100% certain, but we believe these streets, including Long Branch. So,
okay.
That's sort of to be determined.
Okay.
So we've lost our bidding window that we had a really good success last year with asphalt prices and so forth, and that window appears to have now closed, is based upon what the estimates are coming back from Canon. Is that correct? So last year we had a opportunity to do more roads because than we originally anticipated because we got good pavement prices. So it sounds like this year the estimates coming back from the engineers are that we're not going to have those advantageous pavement prices.
I'm not sure that's the driver. I think the reality is that a large bond project was relatively new to staff. We were relying on sort of generalized cost estimates included in the pavement management system to come up with how large of a project we get out there. We undershot by a little bit and had money remaining. I think the good bid prices we saw last year, I think we'll see those again. We've actually, because of the timing of this bid, we're actually in the most favorable time for paving bids, because this is about the time right now where paving companies are putting together next year, this summer's work. So we're in a very favorable bid timing. It's a very large project. We should see economy of scale. So I anticipate really good prices. I just think, as opposed to last time where we sort of underestimated and did a smaller chunk of work and had money left over, this time we sort of overestimated what we could do, and the cost is, the reality of the work and the complexity of the work is that it's more expensive than we anticipated.
Okay. So then from this point forward, we have identified the next series of streets to be done. We need to consider issuing the third bond and some additional amounts to construct all or a portion of the green that's on this map.
That is correct. And I think something that is in front of council as a potential direction to staff is to consider the streets in green, or if this helps council, here at the very end of the report, I have the actual list. Here's the list of streets selected by council. It's two pages long. But if if staff can identify funding and provide an opportunity to design a handful of these streets, maybe just one or two, that council may want to provide direction to staff of, you know, which one's off this list. If we could maybe just give us a 1, 2, and a 3 or a 1 through 5 on this list, that we could then try and get creative and figure out a way to get these projects out to design, so we can put, as the minute we have funding, we can put a project out on the streets.
Okay.
And if the council wanted to come back at a later time to be able to hone in on that, that's fine as well. But again, our interest is to really narrow in on highest priority streets among this package to begin focusing on design work initially for those high priority streets and get those ready to go sooner than a big package as you see before you.
And actually, I'm going to interject there if you don't mind.
Sure.
Because I think our highest priority is to build the streets that are in front of us, and then we'll make a decision slightly thereafter. So, and I don't know if this is even possible, but looking at the streets that are in blue from your prior map, is there a way to basically split the bid and have three contractors build three streets? I mean, we've got Third Street, which runs from Long Branch to its terminus. We're not doing Long Branch until we design it. It crosses by Newport. That's a perfectly standalone street. There's one bid. So now we've got Mentone. Mentone goes from one end to the other. So there's another street. So now we've got two contractors doing streets at the same time. Is there a way to split this bid to have three contractors building three streets at the same time? And therefore, yes, we've got three contractors working at the same time. Maybe we'll have pavement before August. So, I mean, I'm looking for options of accelerating construction. So there would be my potential direction if realizing that the bid just went out today with plans that are packaged as one, but I can anticipate an addendum that would say we're going to consider individual streets.
So let me ask a question on that. It sounds like three contractors working together would make it faster, but what about one contractor who hires three times the number of people? Then that's more efficient.
I think that's a good option. So, however, to what we saw in prior, I don't have a comfort level that one contractor is going to throw three times the effort at it. So
I hear you.
Without
it hasn't happened so far.
Right, without an incentive from us in the contract, and it doesn't sound like that incentive has been written in as of yet.
So how about two contractors? Maybe I'm not even saying contractors.
Compromise.
How about this? Well, no, it's really, I'm thinking, if we're really talking about, if we're reluctant to send just Long Branch out by itself, why don't we just do those streets south of Grand and those streets north of Grand? Yeah, and that way you can put South 8th.
I thought of that, except for the fact that 3rd goes on both sides.
Yeah, I know. It's an exception.
Yeah.
Why don't we ask Greg what he thinks works? I mean, what works best? You work with these guys all the time.
Well, you have something unique here. You have an $8 million paving project in front of you. Well, let's say $6.5 to $7 million of it right in front of you. So you've got a very big project, which is likely to get the interest of very large paving contractors who have the ability to move very fast, as opposed to not attracting the larger paving contractors, attracting smaller paving contractors who, as a result, may actually move slower. Seeking a way within the parameters of what we have in front of us of making this project faster, certainly we would work with the contractor in trying to identify the most aggressive schedule possible and in opening up opportunities if that contractor had ideas to make it faster. I think as we start to branch out into multiple contractors, you have to recall that then we need potentially multiple project managers, multiple construction managers. We have multiple traffic control issues going on. We have multiple public outreach going on. It starts becoming a larger soft cost project, and I'm concerned that the soft costs could actually increase to the point where we had to start thinking about reducing some of the hard costs, and I wouldn't want to see that happen. I'm not sure you're going to see a big difference. I mean, I like the idea. I think it's creative, but I, just in my own personal opinion and my experience, I'm not sure you're really going to see a much faster project than this one large project is going to potentially result in because of the caliber of contractor.
I think those are really valid points, and you also open up the, you know, can of worms of communication issues and people being able to point fingers at the other company. I know, at least, you know, as us being communicators with the community, it seems like the community, once we have work going, all I ever hear is like, this is great, because the community sees it going, even if it does take maybe a little bit longer to do it with one company. I think no matter what we do, we've got to stop these big breaks. I mean, unless we have to for financial reasons, because I think this is where people start getting frustrated. My dad is an Uber driver, and I was getting yelled at today by my own home community. So, yeah, these breaks, people don't understand them because we've got the money and we are, say we want to do it. So we got to stop those. But I think doing the construction the most, you know, the, I think people will be happy when they see shovels out there, and then we can go with that.
So how about we do this? And good suggestion, but I think it's a, it is a good point about soft costs. I mean, those costs have gone, are pretty high. So I think we have a list. Long Branch needs to be done and under construction this year with the other streets. I would then say, let's focus on some of the streets west of 4th, because I think folks there have been feeling like feeling neglected and left out. So maybe that's maybe the green streets that are from 4th over, if we have money or we find the money to start the design, even if we don't have money for the construction, we've got to get it designed and we've got to then go back out and issue another bond. That puts us on track to get that done. And then we, the other green streets we've identified, we can then come back and then figure out how that group fits in there, because we talked about complete streets. We talked about doing 13th Street from one end to the other for a reason. We talked about 16th Street from one end to the other because people don't want just one block here, one block there. So I think that's fair if we say next set of streets we're looking at are those streets north of Grand, west of 4th. If we've got money or we need to find money to get them designed, let's get them designed. Let's get them, give them a big push. And then let's look at the streets that, the other green streets that are in other parts of the city.
Could I suggest that we strongly consider the streets in the industrial area, because we will be having a lot of development in the two industrial areas because of the cannabis business coming in?
Well, I would say that's after we do this, those streets west of Grand. I think there are folks here.
I'm not saying don't do that. I'm just saying, could we put those next in line?
I guess what? Yes. So, yes, everything north of Grand, west of 4th needs to get designed. We'll figure out how what that cost looks like, and then all the other streets that council identified are on the list. We'll just have to refine that list because we still don't have enough funds. We'll have to figure out how much of an issue on the next bond we have to make it.
I would agree with that. I got an email from someone recently who said, oh, well, the word is that everyone west of 4th, actually, that's not even happening. That wasn't part of it. Because, and I said, no, you are part of it. So, yeah, I would strongly recommend we show some love to that section.
I have another question on all of this.
And sure.
Maybe you're probably already going there. I'm trying to work this back on timing because that's what we've been concerned about. So are you going there already?
I think we did. The timing is that we're moving forward on the streets that are designed, and then Long Branch is being designed itself, and we'll likely either go out to bid on its own, or it would be a bid alternate too.
So when I say timing, I mean if we're saying it's going to be 6 to 8 months to get these streets done, and we're trying to make sure we're chunking it all, you know, where one goes right after the other, then working that back, that's going to be around possibly January. So that means the design work has to be done by the end of January for the next one, so that and it needs to be out to bid so that we start work in January 2018. Am I wrong about that? That's what I'm talking about. How do we work that back? What really is our timeline here?
So Matt, do you have something?
I mean, I think, and Greg can correct me. I think, generally speaking, that's correct. We need to have this first round of streets north of Grand, west of 4th, in design mode sooner to be able to have those ready to go so that we have the construction bids ready to go so that we can begin construction. Probably wouldn't be in January given the rainy season. We can't really pave or construct streets very effectively in the wintertime. But as soon as the dry season starts, as in the springtime, we can begin moving forward on those streets and then have the next round happening soon after that. So it becomes a more continual process of smaller packages.
And in order to fund that, we're going to need a bond, which takes 3 months.
Well, it may and it may not. I think that's why I was careful to say the design portion, we may not need a bond, but we'll have to have staff. I think that's good direction. I think, is there a consensus for everyone that basically moving forward with the list of streets that are designed, Long Branch either is going to have to be a standalone or a bid alternate to that. Then we, this year, and I'm going to let staff, you have to come back with some timing on this, start the design of those streets that are north of Grand, west of 4th. And not only that, but then we can prioritize all the other green streets. We kind of gave this big list and we never prioritized them. So as you start the design, if you'll report back to us if we need additional funds and if we need to start the bond process sooner, because we know that could take up to 3 months. But we can certainly start that process now. Maybe it's once the bid is out, once we've selected the contractor that's going to construct the first set of streets, then we move into the design of the next set. That gets us into a roll. But I think staff can come back and we can just kind of refine the time schedule and the time frame. Uh-huh. Everyone good with that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, I want to be careful with that time schedule in relation to the bonding for sure, because I don't know. I feel like this time we have had this $8 million sitting for a little minute that I didn't anticipate and I didn't feel like was efficient. So I don't want to bond too soon. And when we do talk about bonding, one thing I want to know more about, and I'm not sure if other people want to know about this, but I had an email from a constituent asking me, well, what is going to be the future of the maintenance of all these streets? Because we're working through the $48 million, but we don't necessarily, that's only going to bring us, I think, into the 60s of PCI. It's not going to bring us to 100% pavement. Not to mention, we need to maintain what we've done. And I think that's one reason I was asking Mr. Mullinax about the state funds and how they're earmarked. But I want to start talking about the future and how we're going to start accounting for that.
So, yes, I think that's what we would anticipate is if SB1 is successful, it's $420,000, and then there's still, I think, other opportunities. So, but we're in such a deficit with our streets. Mm-hmm. We've got to get them up to acceptable levels, and then it's not going to take as much money as we're using now to maintain them. Greg, I think that's a pretty good summary. But do you want to add anything to that?
That's a great analysis. I mean, we're way on the backside of the curve right now in terms of our streets are, you know, mostly completely failed, and so their cost is pretty significant to make up that that gap. I think as your streets get in better condition, you'll see the cost of maintenance being smaller and smaller. We'll catch the streets at the appropriate timing. and apply, you know, the most cost-effective maintenance technologies that we have, you know, you do have a fairly significant cost ahead of you at somewhere in the future, 20, 25 years or so. You're going to have an annual cost that's going to be significant. I mean, the numbers Mr. Mullinex was talking about here will cover a portion of that. And I think an item that's before you tonight on the agenda will give you opportunities to think about other sources of funding. So,
okay, great. So maybe staff, just to make sure you have clear direction, I don't know if you've taken notes, Greg, can you read back the direction?
I can. So we're going to proceed with the project that's in front of us. That's this list. Oh, crap, missed it there. That's this list with, of course, the exception of Long Branch and Newport. We're proceeding as a single project, and we're out to bid, and we're going to move that project as quickly as we can. Then we're going to get creative, and staff is going to come up with some ways of getting design out on the streets west of 4th. That'll occur approximately simultaneously with Long Branch design being completed and getting that project out to bid. We will look into the idea of scheduling on that and see if we can work around the school breaks or at least a less impactful time. We will be coming back to council to consider prioritization of the remainder of the larger street list, that what we're calling the 17 bond street list, as well as seeking council, providing information to council and seeking guidance from council on the next bond issuance.
And I would just say the clarification, while we always want to work with, whether it's a school or businesses, don't let that be determined. These streets need to get built. I'm on Long Branch all the time. I do live south of Grand. It's not just about me. It's about the folks who I talk to all often. So, okay, I think that's good. With that, why don't we take it?
Just yeah. I'm not sure if we gave a clear direction on the kind of communication strategy. Mm-hmm. So yeah. It sounds like we're going to keep it in-house from this perspective. But I think the best way we can communicate is through construction. It's like the more yeah. we have out there, people are going to see it or people are going to understand it, and they're going to look for information, whether it's on our Facebook or our Twitter or yeah. or just sign postings from various things. So I don't know. I mean, I'd love to have a communication expert brought in to do that. But if we get under construction with the signs back up and so forth,
yeah.
I think that's going to be the
yeah.
best communication.
I think you're right.
Right now.
Yeah,
I agree.
I would add. I would agree. I think results speak for themselves. That being said, I would still be interested in seeing if we could find a low cost communications advisor just to help us in actually doing some of that work, like putting out more signs, putting out some additional postings to help augment what we can do in-house. We're focusing on getting the work done. We're not always the most skilled communicators ourselves. So if we could perhaps just explore some kind of relatively low-cost contract option just to help us in doing that work more effectively.
So how about we give that direction, allow staff to take a look at that. Also, you're going to have to come back and we're going to talk about prioritizing the rest of the streets shown in green. I think also we need to talk about the major road rehabilitation, because it looks like we would have possibly a $500,000 if we don't use it all up in potholing. So there may be a street or two out there we can do, whether it's a section of Grand or whether it's a section of 4th, because I know 4th, entire 4th, you can see where they built the street, and there's one seam where the rain keeps making it shining a bright light on it. Yes.
And then just lastly, is the council comfortable in the city drafting a support letter for AB1, SB1?
That's where I was going next.
Yes.
So is everyone comfortable with that? Now, I know Mr. Mullinex said time is short, so I don't know if we have time to write a letter and then bring it back to this council in April. So do we have the consensus of the council for staff to write a letter for my signature?
Yes.
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 Yep.
Okay.
And I am a participant on the League's Transportation and Public Works Policy Commission. So if there's anything that you want me to, then there's a meeting next Friday, a week from Friday. So if there's anything I can do to take information back to that meeting, I'll be happy to do that as well.
Very good. Thank you, Jeff. Okay. So why don't we take a 10-minute break?
which was last adopted by the council in 2008. In March of 2016, the city awarded the contract to BAE Urban Economics to prepare the update of the strategy. In June 2016, BAE gave a presentation to the council on the initial work completed to date, including a review of existing economic conditions, demographic trends, the real estate market, conditions, and city documents and policies. After that meeting in the fall, BAE conducted stakeholder interviews, which included local business leaders and developers. BAE also completed an online business survey in which over 700 postcards were sent to all businesses within the city, including businesses operating out of their home. BAE has now completed the draft economic development strategy, and tonight Matt Cota will provide the council the presentation. After the presentation, the goal tonight is for staff, staff is requesting that the council provide comments and direction in order to prepare the final economic development strategy. So with that, I will turn it over to Matt Cota with BAE.
All right. Thank you, Bruce. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. It's a pleasure to be back here again. So one of the other items that we've done since we met with you last, in addition to the items that Bruce mentioned, we also conducted some financial feasibility analysis of prototype development projects to get a feel for the economics of building new mixed-use development or apartment, higher-density housing on West Grand Avenue, and or looking at redeveloping existing commercial sites that are underutilized. So that's another piece that factors into the draft strategy that we're going to present tonight. So just a few things, bless you, on the presentation. We'll kind of review the overall scope of the project that we've been working on, give you a quick summary of the background information. Again, we gave the very in-depth presentation last June on that, so we're just going to hit a few of the highlights. The real idea is to present to you the draft economic development strategy, kind of walk you through that, and then we're going to be looking for commentary and direction from the council on finalizing that document for your staff to use and kind of maintain as a working document to guide your economic development efforts. So here we are. We had this basic five-step process. We have prepared the draft strategy, so you can see we're mostly through the process here. We want to get that input and feedback on what we've come up with and then finalize that document in the next couple of weeks if we can. There we are. Okay. Okay, so again, from all of that background analysis that we've done, we had kind of put together your basic SWOT analysis, strengths, weakness, opportunities, and threats. And just to highlight a few of the items there that really stood out. So, of course, you've got an ideal location here with the climate and the beach. The state park's attracting a lot of visitors to your area as a destination. You're one of the few locations that has available industrial land within the county with your business park area. When we looked at the real estate market conditions, we saw relatively low retail and industrial vacancy rates, meaning that the supply that you have is well occupied. You have attractive retail and office rents, so it's known as a more affordable location for retail and office-type businesses within the larger market area. So that's a plus. It also, as you'll hear, makes it a little bit challenging on the development feasibility, though, for new development. In terms of some weaknesses, so one of the ongoing challenges for the city is not having a lot of control over your Highway 101 interchanges and limited visibility, and there's been a challenge in trying to find a site that would be suitable for, say, a large big box retailer. You are a small community, and you're kind of in between some larger ones with Santa Maria and San Luis Obispo, so there tends to be a pull of retail activity, particularly those larger users, to those bigger communities where they have that bigger market area right near them. So you kind of have to work within that constraint. Income, household incomes historically have been a little bit lower. And there's also been limited non-industrial demands, such as areas for residential development, kind of creating some slower growth rates here. In terms of the opportunities, though, you've got the new lodging coming in, and that's an opportunity to diversify your visitor base to the community, where the state parks, the dunes have a certain orientation. You have the opportunity to bring some new visitors to the community and introduce them to the broader Grover Beach, what Grover Beach has to offer. The industrial attraction, again, to kind of capitalize on that available land, the broadband that you have, your new ordinance that's facilitating the medical cannabis businesses. So that's a new opportunity. And then, of course, better capitalizing on the beach access, figuring out ways to really leverage your coastal community identity for economic development. Some of the threats. So we heard over and over from all the different people we've talked to. We heard it in the business survey that I'll get into a little bit more, the homelessness issues and the challenges there. I will say that the sense is that progress is being made. And so that's good to hear, but also a sense of needing to keep the focus on that. One of the other interesting things that we noted was that in your retail base, about two-thirds of your retail sales are actually concentrated in a very small number of businesses. And so that suggests a threat, but it also an opportunity. It means that if you want to do some targeted outreach and business retention type of outreach, that you don't have to go to a whole lot of businesses in order to connect with the right people, start talking to them and understand what their needs are, if there's anything the city can do to make sure that those businesses want to stay within the community. Okay, so the business survey, again, this was something that you authorized us to do when we came to your meeting in June. And what we did was we sent out an invitation to the survey to all the business license holders, as Mr. Buckingham mentioned. And ultimately, and this was an online survey on SurveyMonkey, ultimately what we had was 33 businesses that responded. They were mostly relatively small businesses that had, say, five or fewer employees, and I think it's probably representative of the bulk of the businesses that operate within the city. The responses were really quite positive. Most of the respondents indicated they were quite happy with their location within Grover Beach. They intend to stay within the community. They expect to maintain or increase their employment. And several of them want to get further rooted in the community by being able to buy space as opposed to renting it. So one of the things that I was saying earlier with sort of some side comments in the break was that a lot of times when you put out a survey, particularly a business survey, you hear the people that are upset and they're having serious problems and they really have this need to make their voice heard about all the problems that they're having. But I think the fact that the response was generally positive and people were expressing satisfaction bodes well for that overall sense of the business climate and this business-friendly attitude that we heard about for the Grover Beach community. Proximity to home is the most important or most common reason that businesses gave for why they're located in Grover Beach. And I think this speaks to one of our strategy elements, which is that creating a community that is a really nice place to live and is considered a high-quality place to live is really important to economic development in terms of attracting businesses and encouraging businesses to stay in the community. So we'll come back to that point in our strategy. A couple more highlights. So some of the challenges that we heard, consistent theme, the homelessness, panhandling, challenges there, vandalism and graffiti. But we also heard that this third item, employee recruitment and retention, is a challenge within the community. So that's something to think about. And again, I think it goes back to making sure you've got a high-quality, desirable residential community, and these projects that you've discussed so much, your repaving project and addressing the homeless issues and so forth, I think really speak to that. We have some other ideas as well. Primary strengths, I mentioned the affordable commercial rents, the proximity to the beach. So business respondents also kind of confirmed that and validated that those are two key assets that you have to work with here. The street resurfacing was cited as very important city-funded improvement, in fact, the most frequently cited. But in terms of needs, respondents talked about enhanced security and maintenance of public space as being top needs. So, again, quality of life, security, safety, aesthetics, those sorts of things, really important. So I mentioned the development feasibility analysis. We wanted to understand whether the economic environment currently supports development of mixed-use infill projects or a standalone residential project. And we're thinking of these as potential projects to kind of work on that transformation of West Grand Avenue into a more vital, active type of an environment. And what we found was that in the current environment, the projects don't quite meet that threshold for development profitability to make them attractive for private developers to undertake. However, we also noted that the results are pretty sensitive to the assumptions we made about rents. And so if the rents were to increase, say, from $1.50, $1.70 per square foot up closer to $2 a square foot, these projects would become feasible. And we noticed that in the surrounding area, Pismo Beach and so forth, there are projects that can command those kinds of rents in today's market. And so a lot of it, again, kind of goes back to creating that perception of the value of Grover Beach as a location and desirability to where a developer could realistically target those kinds of rents. We think you're pretty close to it. This isn't a 10 years away kind of thing, but you could be there within several years. A question comes up, though, why don't we see more redevelopment of some of these older commercial properties that have maybe a small building on a relatively large lot? Shouldn't that be attractive to redevelop? And it kind of ties back with this current feasibility situation. We found that as long as somebody has a building, they're generating some income at, say, current market, average market rents for commercial space, it's not going to be attractive for them to either sell to a developer or to undertake a redevelopment themselves. So it would be necessary to have some other incentives or other factors that would encourage that kind of redevelopment to occur. If you have somebody who has a building that's at the end of its useful life, fully depreciated, poor condition, no longer going to be able to rent it, then that could start to become more attractive for new investment. Okay, so from all of that background information, and again, there's a whole lot more there, we have a complete background report that details all of that, that kind of backs up the strategy. But for the strategy itself, I want to kind of walk you through that. First of all, the strategy is something that we think is, has probably 3 to 5 year shelf life. In the strategy, we actually have actions that and contemplate, say, up to 5 or 10 year implementation period. So what that means is that before you got through all of these things, had them fully implemented, you're probably going to be looking at doing an update in, say, 5 years or so, just to freshen it up, make sure things are still relevant. But this strategy can serve as a guide for your annual economic development planning and reporting on what has been accomplished before. So you can kind of use it as a reference to say, well, what have we accomplished in the last year? What do we want to prioritize for implementation in the coming year? Within the strategy, we actually have a framework of 4 major strategies, and then we have a series of actions associated with each of the strategies that kind of talk about how you get there with these different strategies. The document includes some estimated order of magnitude of the cost for implementation, recommended timing for implementation, short-term, mid-term, long-term, and also, importantly, identifying potential partnerships with other organizations that can collaborate with the city to help with doing the work of actually putting these actions into place. The annual work planning, I think the staff will come back to you with their suggestions for what the specific funding sources would be, making refinements to the actions and sort of outlining exactly what is proposed to be done so that you can consider that, say, as part of your budgeting process each year. So the strategic framework, again, four major strategies. The first one, building on your local assets. And that really means to kind of look at those things that you have that are inherent to your location here, so that proximity to the beach, the fact that you do have this available industrial land. You have some unique things that we talk about, like the train station, and a number of other assets that you can build upon and enhance. You've made an investment in the broadband system, so it's time to really start building and capitalizing on that. Enhancing quality of life. So again, going back to why would a business person want to come to Grover Beach? It's a good chance it's because they want to live here. And it's also a good chance that you have somebody who lives here and then eventually they decide to start their own business or move a business here. So really thinking about how you create the environment that's attractive to business owners, but also attractive to their employees so that they know they can attract a high-quality workforce to work for them is really important. Fostering collaboration. Grover Beach is a small city, difficult to go it on your own, so regional collaboration, such as in the regional hotel marketing organization, the TBID, Tourism Business Investment District. And then also, though, focusing on a sub-regional level, cooperating with the Rio Grande and Pismo Beach on coordinating of events and sort of marketing this South County area as a sub-region within the larger county. Finally, building image and awareness. One of the things that we heard pretty frequently was that Grover Beach is a great place, but it's really hard for people outside of the city to know all the great things about it, what the city has to offer, kind of had a low profile within the county. So having these other pieces in place, it's time to sell it, tell a great story about why Grover Beach is such a wonderful place to have a business and to live and to get that message out there. So I'll walk you through the actions that go along with each of these strategies. So the first, building on the local assets. So you have the Beach Lodge and Conference Center project, and that's really capitalizing the fact that you are a beach community, and you can kind of showcase that, but also create this gateway into the western edge of the city on West Grand. So that's important. And again, it gives you an opportunity to diversify the types of people who come and visit Grover Beach and reach out to a segment that's more likely, perhaps, to come and eat in your restaurants, do shopping, and so forth. They're not in a self-contained RV that, you know, bring everything they need in order to do what they want to do in the dunes and then head back out of town at the end of the weekend. The commercial medical cannabis, so I understand since we came here, you've been very busy with that, working really hard on getting those policies in place. I think that sets you up then to become an early mover and to begin to figure out how this industry fits into your community. But we also think that it's important that you monitor how that goes and be really cognizant of how it's affecting your existing businesses, your residents, looking to see if there's any adjustments needed as you're in your implementation. And then also, of course, monitoring the state and federal actions and how you make sure you're aligning things there. But potentially that's a big economic segment of the community. Promoting the broadband system, I don't think I need to say too much about that. Digital West is going to be working on that, but the city can be a good partner in that and think about how that can kind of be a part of the overall marketing message or initiative that I'll talk about in a moment. Promoting the train station. Again, this is a unique thing to be an Amtrak stop. You're part of a national transportation system, and there's a lot of people that are looking for ways to travel that doesn't involve their car. And then having the lodge and conference center in close proximity, we think there's some opportunities there to get some good cross-promotion and take better advantage of that for people who might want to come to Grover Beach via the train and know they can actually get around by foot. They don't have to have a car when they're here. If you've got a nice West Grand Avenue corridor, it's going to encourage people to walk and explore. And then you have some other options as well, like the Butterfly Grove. So if you can kind of, with your street improvements, these sidewalk repairs and so forth, create a nice walking loop, that could be a great thing. Building on that, business-friendly reputation. So again, lots of good words about how Grover Beach is a business-friendly place, easy to do business with. But there's a few improvements that we identified, things like increasing the amount of online information, an online permitting system, perhaps. I think I mentioned this idea about outreach to key businesses for retention. I think that could fit within that type of an idea. And then in 1F, capitalizing on the beach visitors. Again, thinking about the fact that you do have a very large number of visitors coming for the dunes, but thinking how do you reach out and kind of leverage the fact that they're there to bring at least a greater portion of them into Grover Beach itself. So we have some ideas about building up 4th Street and a node, 4th and Grand, as a place that would specifically kind of target those users and help them understand what's up Grand if they were to go that way instead of just making the right and heading right down to the dunes. And then also cross-promotion. So some people who go to the Lodge and Conference Center would love to go out and spend an afternoon out in the dunes, and that may be an option to kind of foster some partnerships for packaging excursions to the dunes for lodge visitors, and then other cross promotions as well for that lodge and conference center to try to work with other local businesses so that you're increasing the benefits of having that asset in the community and increasing those expenditures that people make. A lot of times when people are visitors to a community, they just need to know what the opportunities are to spend their money and how to do it. And if it's made easy for them, then they'll spend more money. But it's not easy sometimes when you're new to a community to understand what those opportunities are. So that's strategy number one. The second one, enhancing the quality of life. So I've explained how important that is. Enhancing West Grand Avenue is really a centerpiece. That's your main street, as you know, and enhancing it as an environment for businesses to operate on, for people to come and visit, bless you, and making it more pedestrian-friendly. We heard about needing to have better street lighting in, just a range of improvements, traffic calming, signage improvements, the kinds of things that are going to make it a really inviting and enjoyable place. And you have some businesses like your Spoon Trade restaurant and so forth that are actually drawing people from outside of the community to Grover Beach, maybe their first time here, show them a nice West Grand streetscape. They're going to remember the whole experience and hopefully bring their friends back or think about other times they want to come and visit themselves. So lots of opportunities there. You have your master plan, so continuing to implement that would be important. And then again, thinking about these catalyst projects, they're not quite financially feasible right now, but if you wanted to try to jumpstart some things, thinking about whether there's some prioritization or incentives that you can give to projects on West Grand that help achieve that overall feel that you're looking for. So things like fee deferrals, maybe thinking about where you can put some of your public improvements in that would benefit some of the sites that would really be targeted for new development. There's a number of things you might be able to do to just kind of move the needle enough to help people get going and do some of those projects. The homeless assistance, again, just something that requires probably constant attention and effort, but so important to creating the kind of business environment that's going to be successful. The arts initiative is something that we kind of came up with in talking with people about the history of Grover Beach and the fact that Grover Beach has had a history of hosting sort of an artist community, not very visible, but when you think about the relative affordability the lifestyle here. It would be really conducive to having that kind of arts-based activity. And arts-based economic development is something that is really beginning to catch on from the standpoint of, again, improving the quality of life. People like to go places where there's things like art walks and galleries and things for exploring. But also, it can be a source of economic activity itself in terms of artists who are selling their various products that they create, whether they're sculptures or pottery or paintings, photography, what have you. That can be a source of local economic activity. So we had some suggestions there from ways to encourage public art, street art, painting of utility boxes, things like that, as well as looking at maybe how to establish some lower cost exhibition space in buildings that are vacant or what have you. So there's some ideas there. I'll give a plug to one of our current former clients, the city of Eureka. We did an economic development strategy for them about a year ago. It was a little ways before we came on board for this project. And one of the items in there was an economic development strategy that was relating to arts. They've actually developed a really wonderful arts initiative that is a whole strategy unto itself. I happened to be there for a council presentation, and it went over extremely well, really got people excited. And the key part there is that artists are so passionate about what they're doing, they want to share that with the community, that a lot of artists, individuals and organizations have come forward to assist with that. And so that's a place where you can leverage that creativity and energy to help the city with implementation. So I'd really encourage you to think about that as something that could be a long-term benefit for the community. Fostering collaboration, again, I kind of explained the need for a small community like Grover Beach to be a cooperator and to combine efforts with other entities. So there it is, the TBID, Tourism Business Improvement District. That's something, it's in place, you're participating. We think that's probably wise to continue. And then again, the collaboration between your neighboring cities of Arroyo Grande and Pismo Beach, some coordination and promotion of and cross-promotion of the different events and activities that are available for visitors. It's very close, so somebody who's staying in Grover Beach could easily be attracted to Pismo Beach activities and so forth. And then finally, building image and awareness. So we just have one action here, but we actually listed a range of the types of messages or elements that should be included in a marketing initiative, and then also suggested some of the targeted audiences and means to actually get that message out there. I think our main focus on that would be to really emphasize within the greater San Luis Obispo County area so that we're not necessarily saying we think somebody's going to pack up and relocate from the Midwest or somewhere, you know, well out of the area to Grover Beach, but what we think there's an opportunity to go after is the small to mid-sized businesses that are already within the general area. They're looking for expansion space. That's something Grover Beach can offer. They just need to be informed of what's available here. And there's a number of targeted business sectors that the Economic Vitality Corporation has identified. So that gives you some ideas about the types of businesses that you could be looking at that should have good growth prospects within the area. So that's the very quick run through of the overall strategy. Again, the document itself has more details in the strategy document, and then there's a lot of background detail in that background document. So what we're hoping to do is take any questions that you have, but then get some input and direction for how we finalize that and get that complete for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Matt. Let's see if there's any questions. Miriam?
I had one. I noticed one of our really growing industries is wholesale trade. And I was wondering if you could explain to me exactly what that is.
So wholesale trade would be the types of businesses that are selling to retailers. So they're not selling to the end user, but they're selling to retailers. A wholesaler could be anything from, say, like a produce distributor to a maybe certain kinds of businesses that sell to contractors, or, again, they could be a supplier to a retailer, that type of thing. So they're, okay. Typically, you'd expect to see them in your industrial area, in more of a warehouse type of a space where they can bring trucks in and out.
Okay. Yeah, I think that was the only question I had. I have some comments. Well, one thing I do have a question about, and I'm not sure if you were privy to it, but we just recently set goals as a city, and I'm not sure if you got to see those, but some of the strategies do go very hand in hand with the goals, but some, I mean, I know our one big goal is economic development, but I guess, gosh, as I was reading this all day today, I was like, how do you fit all this in? And one of your recommendations was, for example, capitalize on beach visitors and encouraging possibly someone to open a boogie board rental shop. And gosh, as a city, I know we've been, like, probably the first week I met you, you talked about that booth by the train station and how we would love for someone to be renting boogie board there. But, like, what more can we do besides, like, dragging someone and forcing them to rent boogie boards out of a booth? You know, it's hard. I guess I will need, when you finalize, maybe a little help with direction and because a lot of this, man, we've done a lot as far as fee deferral. This, someone came to us and asked us to open something cool, we'd probably defer the fee. But how do you get there?
Yeah. Well, I guess specifically to the boogie board rental, I think, you know, the opening of the lodge and conference center, I think, will create a lot of buzz. It's going to get a lot of attention. And probably about the time that is, say, under construction and getting going would be a great time to announce, hey, we have this opportunity. We're opening a lodge. It's going to bring all these people. We already have a whole lot of other people out in the dunes. Here's an opportunity, a new business opportunity for somebody. So I think kind of piggybacking on things and identifying where you can take advantage of positive publicity and mm-hmm. so forth, you know, timing is probably really important on something like that.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Barbara?
There's so much to think about in here and project that I just sort of see this as a skeleton for us to flesh out, and I don't really have any questions. The skeleton is pretty clear, pretty bare bones.
Very good. Debbie?
I have questions. This one is for staff, and I'm wondering if there would be an opportunity, again, for us to use any of the upcoming CDBG funds for any further economic impact studies or...
CDBG monies are, you have to meet the national objectives, and they have to assist low-income people. So we have a certain limitation. There's probably not a whole lot in here that would be CDBG eligible, but we'll think about that, and it will come back to the council for discussion on April 17th.
Okay. And then following on from that, just looking for money, of course, I know that we do have the $190,000, and I'm also painfully aware that our sister cities on either side of us got about four times that. And so I know that our Jeff, you had said that you thought there might be other opportunities to go back for more. So I wondered if there is any further opportunity for us to go back and ask for equity with the other cities.
I want to respond to that now, or have further conversation?
Well, we can have further conversation once you attract that. Once you keep, are you going to address it when your time comes?
Okay.
Anything else, Kay?
Yeah. And I was curious, you said we're perceived as a business-friendly community. And tell me more about that. What is it that made people say we're business? What are we doing right there?
Yeah, I think what it is that you're a small enough community that when somebody comes down to City Hall and wants to do something, open a business, maybe do a development project, that it's very clear who they need to talk to, what the process is. And the feedback we had was that people felt like these things happened in a way that was satisfactory and comparatively easy, as opposed to other communities that they've worked in, say if they were a developer. And then people felt that when they came and had a project that the city would work with them to figure out how to make it work, as opposed to just saying, oh, you can't do that, that's against this rule, whatever, but that there was a willingness to engage and to figure out how to make things work. So I think it's that kind of personal touch that you get in a smaller community, in the sense that, you know, think people can make things happen when that's appropriate. So,
and on the other side of that, I guess there was one person in the out of 24, or you could include the 1135, who wasn't happy. Why weren't they happy?
Yeah, that's hard to answer. We are, can only go with what's in there. But as I said earlier, I think that the fact that overwhelmingly people who did respond seem to be happy tells me that you don't have a frustrated business community out there that's just chomping at the bit to come down and tell you all the things, you know, that they're upset with, the problems that they're having. So the fact that there was one, of course, you're all concerned with that and don't want to have that. But overall, I have to say in perspective, that's a pretty excellent overall outcome from the survey.
And did you explore any, in terms of mixed use, did you explore boutique hotels or bed and breakfast or senior housing, things that could attract higher rent than standard housing?
Yeah. The ones that we looked at were, again, a mixed use project that had apartments over retail and then an exclusively residential project. We had some discussion about possibly looking at a hotel, but that was one that we felt would be a very unique situation in terms of a boutique hotel really would be something that would be a one-off creation. So we couldn't say, oh, let's do a financial model for something like the Holiday Inn Express that I'm staying in or some other type of a standard hotel. Would really be something that a developer would have to come in, kind of clean slate, figure out what that program is, and really design it especially for the particular situation that they're trying to put it into. So we felt like doing a generic analysis of that might tell us something, but it wouldn't necessarily be representative of what would actually happen in the future. So we kind of shied away from that option.
So when you were looking at these and you were saying that we simply don't attract high enough rent to make it pencil for builders, did you take into account the fact that our land is cheaper when you did that penciling exercise?
Yes, okay. We did, yeah.
And so the only option then is to build things that attract higher rent or to attract tenants that pay higher rents.
Right.
Okay.
Right, yeah, to really be able to attract the premium, say, you know, the person or business that's looking for that premium type of a setting and is willing to pay the higher price. They're not necessarily driven by the economics and saying, well, gee, why would I want to pay 50% more than average to live in this apartment? It's really more of a lifestyle choice as opposed to something that's economically driven where somebody needs to get the absolute best value they can because they're right at their limit in terms of what they can afford. So that's a challenge. But again, the ingredients to create that kind of environment are here, but it's also a matter of convincing people that that environment is here, and I think that's part of where that marketing initiative comes from, and this supporting those kinds of ideas with the enhancements to West Grand Avenue, if that's what we're talking about developing.
So, and did you do any, did you interview anybody from the industrial area? Or get any responses from people in the industrial area?
We did not speak with any specific users within the industrial area, but we did talk to brokers who kind of represent property owners and properties within that industrial area and got some feedback from them.
So you don't have a concept of how many of the jobs that are in Grover Beach are actually in the employment? You don't have a concept of how much of that is in the industrial area?
We didn't try to break that out.
Okay.
We could maybe make some guesses, but it would be a guess at best because we did look at the breakout of the types of jobs in Grover Beach by sector, but they could, they're not, say, an industrial sounding job might not actually be in the industrial area.
But the breakout, wasn't that just based on the 25 people you interviewed?
No. That and again, this goes to the background report where we had a an industry breakdown for the types of jobs.
And did you do any questioning of whether of the interest people would have from relocating to Grover from San Luis Obispo? Did you actually investigate that at all?
Well, so the survey itself, again, went to Grover Beach businesses. We really had to target it to local businesses. But in the interviews that we had done with brokers, with Mike Manchak of the EVC and some other people that have that broader countywide perspective, what we heard, again, was that a lot of people just aren't really aware of what Grover Beach has to offer. The industrial area is off the beaten path. If somebody doesn't come right down here and go to that area, they may never know it exists. If what they know of the city is what they see from 101, and maybe if they're, you know, even just going down West Grand Avenue, they're not necessarily going to be aware of that. And so this idea of Grover Beach being under the radar screen is a challenge. So that if you're able to develop the message and get it out there effectively, the thought was that, yes, people will start to look at Grover Beach, especially if they understand that there's room for expansion for businesses that don't have other options with where they're currently located.
And did you have any concept of did you get any feel for how the closure of PG&E might affect us?
That was that wasn't something that we got into in depth. We did come to understand that there are a fair number of people, or at least anecdotally, people feel there's a fair number of people who work at the plant, that live here in Grover Beach. And so, you know, we would be concerned about the possible relocation of those folks and what impact that might have.
And I'm almost done here. Did you do any analysis of how many businesses may be displaced by the cannabis businesses come in by the change, by the regime change? Did you do any analysis of that?
We did not.
Okay. And almost there. I think. Yeah, I'm done. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll start with questions regarding the report. So I know, and thank you for the presentation. I thought it, as Miriam mentioned, it kind of brought back a number of the topics that we were talking about at our goal session. Just to kind of add to some of that discussion, the conversation about El Camino, so with regards to our presence on 101, obviously that is our presence on 101. There, I didn't see or a discussion about what could be done there, and that seems to be obviously we've got a hotel that's about to go under construction. Was there any initiatives or anything that we might consider along there that should be put in the report or could be added to the report?
Yeah, that's a good question. And, you know, it's not something that came up in the various discussions that we had, but I think it's worth thinking about. I'm thinking back to a project we did in the town of Colma up in northern San Mateo County, where they kind of had a similar situation. They're right off a freeway, but don't have a lot of visibility from the freeway, except for their cemeteries off in the distance. And so what we actually included in a strategy there was looking at having a large sign that was visible from the freeway. That's not an easy thing to do. The city wanted, or town wanted, to look into that. So we had included that. But I think, you know, short of that, it's sort of the physical constraint of you know, what your city boundaries are and what you have to deal with. But I think is, you know, having some hotels and things that are visible from the freeway, you know, that's important. And they obviously want to have the height so that they're visible. But how you tie that back to people recognizing, well, that's Grover Beach, you know, that's the question.
Right. So now, and did, along those same lines, did you take into consideration that some of the infrastructure is going to be installed along El Camino as part of the hotel project, and the city invested in effectively the turnout on down El Camino, or excuse me, down Oak Park and then El Camino? So there's a little bit more infrastructure that would could potentially be an attractive element.
Yeah, as I recall, that was something that you were discussing the last time I was here.
Yes.
That's another good point. And that might be something that fits into the building on assets. So if you've got some investments being made there, we can talk with Bruce and Mr. Bronson about whether, you know, there's something that we can add in that talks about leveraging that or building on that asset there.
Okay. Then I'll next switch to the broadband, and I appreciate the inclusion of that. So do we? And this is a question for staff. Do we have an update on when that is anticipated to break ground, and the agreements are anticipated to come back before us, if they need to? I forget if we needed to bring them back one more time for final approval, because obviously the breaking of ground and the conduit in the ground and fiber in the ground, that's going to allow for the next step of some of the marketing that we're discussing.
Absolutely. You have to have the conduit installed before you can market it effectively.
Right. Yes.
We are finalizing the agreement with the county as we speak. That does not need to go back to the council per your direction back in the fall. We have a couple of tweaks we're making to the Digital West Agreement to just finalize expectations and direction from the council. We have the construction contract ready to let out, but we need to have the county agreement in place to get it finalized so that we can have the cost sharing documented and agreed to before we can go forward. The actual construction is pretty brief. It's not a very long process. It's just a matter of getting the agreements finalized before we start that. And Dave can certainly elaborate as needed.
Okay. So do we anticipate construction this spring then? Or
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I submitted the agreement to the county for review. I have not heard back from them, but I will be following up with them shortly to find out what the status is. As soon as they give back their comments, we'll finalize the negotiation of that. Then we can go forward with the other agreements.
Okay, great. So then switching gears to the economic development, the $190,000 that Debbie was referring to from the Diablo closure. Fortunately, PG&E is not closing, but the Diablo closure and the economic development. That's a discussion that was had between the cities. We internally as a city decided not to participate in that, the city did not pay anything towards the coalition of six towards that, and so we have no idea if we are getting a great equity. I would anticipate that since we received or in the possibility of receiving the $190,000, we don't know what the other cities have spent to gain the so-called equity. However, we did participate, and where we will have an opportunity to review the economic impacts of Diablo would be through the Monning Bill, through the economic development strategies that the EVC are putting forward, in which case we are part and parcel of that discussion, which will potentially bring some economic activity and some funding and some dollars back into the city from that perspective. The coalition of cities and the county and John, tell me if I get too close to.
Oh, I was thinking I should leave.
to that is that's not a done deal yet. So I mean, it's the CPUC has not ruled on that, and so until that ruling takes place and the money is actually in hand, it's a bird in the hand versus two in the bush type of conversation. But I think we are going to participate in that as a city to where we can. But we made the decision, and I think a very economical decision, to not participate because it didn't cost us anything to participate in the coalition of cities. So with that, I won't go any further and conclude my comments and my questions.
Great. And all joking aside, I actually work for PG&E, so we're not making a decision. Here's why we'll put a fine point on that is that any action taken has to be approved by the California Public Utilities Commission. So I'll leave it there. Anyway, Matt, thank you for that presentation. I think it was very well done. I think the strategy, I have to tell you, as I was reading this, I was sitting there saying, wow, we've been saying a lot of this for years, you know, and it's good to actually have that validation. You know, I think the things that this council, the previous councils and others in the city and others who've engaged, we've been trying to do a lot of these things. And so it is a challenge when you are a small city, when you are operating in a location between the two, like you said, the two largest cities, you know, San Luis Obispo and Santa Maria, for all intent and purpose, the county seats for two respective counties. So I have to admit, I was thinking back many years ago when we sort of did a similar effort. We were bringing in someone to help us with economic development. The individuals were coming, they were driving down, they were heading south on the 101, they passed Grover Beach, they didn't realize they were lost until they got to Napomo, and they said, well, there's no signage that says where Grover Beach is. So we went and twisted the arms of Caltrans. You now have two signs on the freeway that say Grover Beach next exits. Now, one of the condition of that, when we were fighting to get those signs, they said you don't own or control any land that has an off ramp or an on ramp onto 101, but we will make this one exception provided you put in directional signage. So what happens when someone pulls off and you're heading south on 101, you get off at Oak Park and you get to El Camino Real. There's no signage that says welcome to Grover Beach. There's no arrow that says Oak Park that way, beaches that way, downtown that way. We've been having this conversation for many years, and for the life of me, we just got to figure out a way to make it a priority. Because you got the same thing when you're coming off of, it's not Five Cities Drive, but it's 4th Street off-ramp. Mm-hmm. And then we've got these, I don't even know how to characterize these little signs that got there with these little diminutive figures that... Yeah, you go to Atascadero, you go to San Luis Obispo, it's a sign, it's in their colors, it's got a logo on it, it's got bold white letters in the city's approved font, and arrows pointing. We need to do that. So I think I will just say, let me ask you some questions, but I am going to just finish with my comments so anyone can respond to them or anyone wants to come up. Like what you did, I think a lot of the actions we are making great progress on, especially on the building local assets. They all speak for themselves. You went down the list. And I think the boogie boards and all that, that was one of the main reasons why we went from a 135-room and glorified Motel 6 to remaking that whole entire west end of Grand with a nice plaza that has the ability to rent boogie boards and do all those things. So we're on the right track. I was curious, though, with respect to... clusters of industry. I know that basically the EVC, San Luis EVC, has six economic strategy clusters of industry, which are what building, design, and construction, knowledge and innovation, unique, slow, county, advanced manufacturing, health services, and energy. It's a lot, I know. So I didn't know if that's something that we should probably think about in Grover Beach. Did you guys think of that? I mean, I love the fact that you have specific action items that will help us stay focused and prioritize where our funds and the fund monies we have. But was there any discussion about that?
Yeah. So actually, your city manager and community development director encouraged us to call that out in the description of that marketing initiative, mm-hmm. where, you know, those could be targeted industries for that marketing effort to make sure you're getting outreach to those particular businesses within those types of clusters as one of the targets for getting the word out. So, you know, I think those clusters, they kind of overlap in a number of different ways, but if you think of, say, you know, uniquely slow businesses, we're suggesting that you actually look at trying to recruit businesses that have kind of a lifestyle tie to the local area or to the beach lifestyle, say, that you could have in Grover Beach. So I think that, you know, works that way. When you talk about some of the other sectors that the EVC is targeting, again, which businesses within those sectors are looking for expansion opportunities? Can you get some of them into your business park? That's a, you know, it's a way to build on the work that the EVC is already doing, but to try to insert your own marketing message in there to make them aware of what you have to offer in Grover Beach.
Yeah, that'd be great, because I know we've talked about hospitality, the technology with the broadband, and of course the commercial cannabis. I think we still have not even touched on the potential there, you know, because we're just looking at the specific activities, but there are spinoff businesses that I've been doing a lot of reading about that, you know, whether it's paraphernalia or whether it's plastic bags or whether it's, I mean, I think there's a real potential that we haven't even begun to comprehend the type of generation. We've seen it on the property values, but I mean, as far as number of employees and things of that nature. So
right. Yeah, there's an entire industry cluster that could build up around that, from research, testing, packaging, marketing, legal services. I mean, you name it. I mean, there's so many types of other peripheral businesses that could be touched by that industry.
Okay. And then is the idea for the end product to be a document that's, and I mean, the way you've done the summary, I think, is fantastic, but I mean, a glossy document that's, let's say, 10 to 15 pages that is easily, is clear, concise, targeted, that someone could take to a trade show or take to the EVC or some of the collaborative partners. Is that kind of what you see as the end product of this, or
the strategy document that we created here is essentially what the end product will look like, but we'll make some adjustments based on the input that all of you have given us this evening. I think if you want to have something that you condense down into that glossy handout type of thing, that would be something that this information would be readily adaptable to that, but you'd probably want to work with a graphic designer,
somebody
who has more skill in the visual presentation than economic development consultants. So that could be a part of that marketing initiative, that you put together some collateral materials.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, there's a lot of text here, so, I mean, graphics would be fantastic. I do have to say I felt somewhat, like we said, validated, right? And I have to read this bullet. It says, with a population that is somewhat younger than average, the city may benefit from activities designed to foster youth culture, including music, the arts, and technology. So I didn't use the slogan. I didn't use the quote I was quoted on. But I really just think you did a really good job of identifying strengths, weaknesses, opportunities. And, yes, I know that we need to get a handle on the homeless, the homelessness issue or the transient issue, and we are attacking those. But I think this really validates what we've all been doing and what the community said they wanted. I will ask you one last question, though. They did combine the chambers, so there's a Roy Randy and Grover Beach chambers, but it sounds like one of the recommendations is potentially creating either a business district of some sort to kind of be more grower-centric. Is that kind of what you just talked about?
Yes. You know, I think I understand why the chambers might be combined, and it probably makes sense on a certain level, but having some additional collaboration amongst the businesses here in Grover Beach could be beneficial, and we think that could take some different forms, and I think it really depends on the appetite that the businesses themselves have to participate in what form. So it could be something like a business improvement district that's focused on a geographic area like West Grand. It could be a more informal type of association or organization, dues paying or not dues paying. But I think it's important to get input from the business owners and to see, you know, what they want to champion for themselves, to really get them invested in that, as opposed to having the city say, well, you know, this is what's going to be good for you, this is what we want you to do. Because I think the energy and the drive from that should come from the businesses, but there are ways that the city can facilitate and help that along.
Agreed. Great. Do you have something? You good?
Oh, I was just thinking, I just had a discussion about that situation very recently, and the idea came up of just an informal group of our small businesses. There were, we've got a few employees and so on, but they all have the same exposure on along Grand Avenue. A quarterly sit down. What do we need to do here? What do we need to do there? What do you want to see? That sort of thing.
Sounds good. I think that's kind of what he's recommending. Yeah. You guys are suggesting. Right?
One community we work with had periodic business breakfasts.
Yeah.
So you get it scheduled before people need to open up their shops. Mm. Give them some free food. Mm-hmm. Give them a venue to air things out, and that can attract a lot of people, and you can get some really good feedback. And it's also an opportunity to kind of give some of those city updates and things to inform them of things that are happening. So there's some pretty simple things you can do to get engaged.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, I just, if you do, again, look at the El Camino Real development, I've always thought in my mind, especially with the hotel going in, that maybe a restaurant there might also be good. Like, I love local restaurants, but a chain restaurant with a big sign that people could see from 101, 'cause I know everyone says they're super healthy, but everyone from the five cities would come for a Cheesecake Factory to Grover Beach. Everyone from San Luis would come. Everyone from Santa Maria would come. Like, we go all the way to Santa Maria for Red Lobster, like, very often. We're guilty. So I don't know if you do look at that issue, maybe that would be a way of using our limited frontage.
So hopefully the lodge and the conference center will spur that kind of interest from the private industry. That's a hard thing. Because I know many years ago, we actually, our previous council authorized doing a study, and we jointly did that with the Royal Grandy, in which they looked at the profiles of the folks who live there, their spending habits and whatnot, and identified retailers that would be a good fit. And Royal Grandy, I think, used that and went out and brought certain businesses into Royal Grandy because there was no distinction. I think in your report you talked about Grand Avenue and not being able to make a distinction in some of the redevelopment going on in Royal Grandy because, you know, it is a society that basically says, I want freeway visibility. And our challenge is getting people to come down to the beach, or those who are coming down to the beach should not just be self-contained, but to get out and explore. So that's an opportunity. But
I think once we receive the final report, so much of it really did go along with our goals. I was a little bit relieved because as I was reading the background, I was getting overwhelmed. Like, there's so much here. But then when you really look at the goals, so much of it goes along with what we're doing. But maybe when we do get the final, we should really break out certain things like the business association and say, this isn't one of our goals. Maybe we start a subcommittee to work with the chamber on that or something. We address those in some way, but stay focused just on our goals because, I mean, this is enough to blow your mind. There's a lot here.
Well, I would just say, I think part of the direction, And you know what I should do? Let me do this. Let me open this up to the public and see if there's anyone in the audience that would like to address this item. Okay, seeing no...
Not at this time. Okay, public.
No pressure. No pressure. All right. Seeing no one come forward, let me bring it back. So I think we've given comments and maybe we can give some directions to finalize the economic development strategy. But I would see if my colleagues are interested. I think it would be worth working with a graphic designer to see how you can spruce this up. Because I think when you look at what the city of Paso Robles has a really good economic development strategy and in its presentation more so than, you know, I haven't looked at all the details of it, but it's something that's easily, you can take it. I was a part of it many years ago at the EVC. They came in and did a presentation on the city and left that. So, Matt?
Yeah, and one option is that we finalize the draft, the report, but then have a companion summary document that could be the document we take on the road and bring to the EVC and other groups so that we'll have the final strategy. That's more the text document, but we'll have a summarized, easily identified, graphically designed version that would be our main roadshow.
And then I would think maybe there's an opportunity for you, since you're finalizing goals and you're putting together a budget pretty soon, that maybe we can take this document and just kind of, you know, draw on what's in the action plan and what's being addressed and what are some of the, where are the other opportunities.
Absolutely. In fact, I think the timing that you pointed out is really advantageous. Council identified key goals, with economic development being one of the most important goals. I think you can really pinpoint where that's coming out in this strategy. I'll point out that the strategy is longer term in nature. It's designed as a multi-year, upwards of a 10-year blueprint of economic development activities. The goals you identified were really items to focus on over this next year. Mm-hmm. So there are going to be key items that we're going to come back to you with a work program on April 17th to see if we've got it right for what to really hone in on and do this next year, knowing that we will likely be able to get to other items longer term in that make the strategy a viable document for years to come.
Okay. Hey, Matt, I had one, maybe two more questions for you real quick. Under the, you said under current market conditions, neither project would meet the minimum profitability requirement of at least 15% return on cost. Is that the market standard now, or is there a range that investor would accept?
Yeah, there's always ranges, and there's always special circumstances. But from the folks that we spoke with about doing this kind of project in Grover Beach, say on West Grand Avenue at this time, that was roughly the number that people said they'd be targeting to want to undertake a project.
So that maybe, you know, because I had always heard 10-11% somewhere thereabouts. And then the last thing, and I did talk to a property owner recently who had talked about this $2 per square foot on Grand Avenue would make it to where it would be profitable for him to move forward in building out some property that they own. So mm-hmm. How would we get to that? Is that part of us, let's say, doing more infrastructure improvements, the lighting, the landscaping, sidewalks, and things of that nature? Because that's the one thing we can control as a government.
Right. Yeah, I think those things help. I think another couple restaurants that, you know, start to get that positive feedback going, the aesthetic improvements. I mean, just things like, we mentioned the sign ordinance maybe it's enforcement, an updating mm-hmm. sign ordinance to kind of clean things up, some street lighting. I mean, those are things that incrementally add value to the area. And then, you know, ultimately it may take one developer who really believes in the city and that area to go for it and to do a project and prove that it works, and then the others will come in. But we often see that those pioneer projects are done by somebody who says, you know, I don't necessarily need 15%. I lived here all my life. I just want to do this. I really believe in it. If I can just cover my costs, you know, I'm happy. But then that kind of thing really is what helps to kick things off. So if you have somebody out there that wants to work with you and you have ways to do that, then that's, you know, your catalyst project.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point, because that's what John Keff did with Beach Place. They did the train station, and he came in and took the chance, and I believe in Grover. And that's the obviously the block from 3rd over to near Station Grill. So mm-hmm. we need one more person. I agree.
Yeah.
Great. Thanks. Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
I wanted to go on a little more about the industrial area. I had a conversation with one of the cannabis business owners today, and I said, you know, help us know what we can do for our existing businesses and help us solve that problem. And he said, and I said, I think we've got about, I said, at least 10 businesses, I'll be conservative, and probably 50 jobs going or gone. He said, oh, no, it's a lot more than that. It's a lot more than that. So, and that's a Grover person. So I guess my concern is that we have a real immediate problem of losing existing businesses and existing jobs, and I'm not sure how we're going to address that. Report doesn't.
What's the source on that, Debbie? I'm just trying to understand.
Well, I don't want to name names here, but it's someone who lives in Grover Beach and is actively working in the cannabis businesses, who I interviewed today, or who came to me to talk today. You know, we had a 2-hour conversation, and part of it was, you know, how do we support local businesses? How do we back local businesses? How do we solve some of the problems? But the source is the local businesses who are closing up shop and moving out of town, or being displaced because their rents are doubling, or because their buildings are being sold.
So let's do this. I mean, that was not part of tonight's study.
No, it just we is didn't there, address it because it was an old study.
Well, I'm just saying, is there interest in the council to come back and have put this on something like that on the agenda and have a more thorough discussion of that and get sources, and if we need to do an inventory, we can do that. Is there interest in doing that?
I think I would like. I'm on the fence because I know the staff is stretched and we want to get cannabis rolling out, but I do think maybe this is part of cannabis, but not a full economic, you know, like this thorough of an economic study. I think it's as simple as looking at what's sold and what's turned over, and just, you know, maybe I would, because I'm super surprised to hear that, actually, because I'm hearing the opposite. I'm hearing that a lot of offers were made and a lot of offers fell through. Mm-hmm. And even a lot of the people at our meeting that we were at ended up being just fine. So, and that's why actually our last council meeting was much less empty with business owners than I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. Because it actually didn't turn out to be what it initially was. So I don't want a ton of time, but if it's something that's out there, I don't want to be going by she said. So,
mm-hmm. Well, and I agree. So,
yeah.
And maybe it's not a, I don't know, it's not a full, I think there's always two sides to every story. So maybe that's some direction we can give staff, because I think we need to also ask the question of these new business potentially coming in, what are the number of employees and things of that nature. So
yeah, and just from a timing standpoint, I'll mention that we are targeting May 1st as the date to come back to the council with the first reading of both the land use and regulatory ordinances and begin that process. That could be one avenue to bring back information regarding business impacts. If the council wanted sooner, we could do that. That would require some juggling of other priorities and other information.
Maybe it would be as simple. I know you send out mailers to you have a good list now of people who need to be informed. Would it be as simple as sending a one-page survey to people along with that mailer? I don't know.
You mean the mailer for the public hearing?
Yes.
We could explore putting in something with that notice. That's a broader notice that covers a broader demographic and a different audience.
How about when you come back, let's just put an agenda item, let's have a conversation. We got to put the regulations in effect. They need to we got to approve them. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to go into effect. People still have to go through a permitting process. Mm-hmm. So I think there's time for us to just do a real quick, what's down there, what's turned over, what kind of job creation are we talking about, you know, because I mean, would we be doing this if this was any other business? I want to be very sensitive and careful about that as well. But I do think we've underestimated the potential jobs that could be coming into this industry. And I think there's also this misperception that people think that other businesses are not compatible or would not continue to operate down there. And I don't believe that to be the case. I think we just need to do this.
I have a question.
Yes.
When a business does close, is there any notification to the city that they're going out of business and for any reason or anything like that? Okay.
I think I can tell you, I know of two instances where, I'll just talk about one instance where there was a landowner who chose to sell but brokered a deal in which the individual purchasing that building allowed time for the existing tenant to either relocate or help with that relocation. But that's not something that I would advocate this city gets into. That's private.
Right.
That's private enterprise. But I think to the point of if we can have information, and if this body chooses to say a portion of the fees or whatever that comes from the new commercial cannabis industry be put into an economic fund that could help, maybe. But I you know, not just off the top of my head, but maybe that's a discussion we can have at a separate, but not tonight.
No.
And actually, I'll piggyback on just that for just 1 second. In the fact that Matt, in his presentation, basically kind of laid a little bit of a groundwork for us. In the fact that he said 2/3 of our retail sales are concentrated in a very small number of businesses. So obviously, the retention opportunities in those businesses is high. So, but also the opportunity in the cannabis industry is high along the lines of again making sure that the existing businesses that might be displaced or consider themselves not compatible, because I think we're trying to fashion an ordinance that allows for compatibility between commercial cannabis and the existing mm-hmm. uses down there. I think we're doing a very good job of making sure that compatibility remains. And then it becomes a private business discussion whether they want to make that change. And I'm hearing much more of the anecdotal conversation like the mayor and the mayor pro tem are hearing in the fact that the businesses are not being displaced, that they're not being forced out at this point. I have not heard of anyone coming forward and saying this is not the case, but we've got regulations to bring forward to kind of protect all interests.
So I think there's a consensus to have staff just come back with maybe just a brief report on that. But I would say around the same time frame, not before. Let's not scramble resources, because I think we were pretty adamant about streets today, so I would hate to see streets get dropped.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Okay. Great. Thanks again, Matt. Bruce, you have what you need? To see you.
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
Please.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I mean, I think I heard a lot of great comments that are pretty global, and they're probably not something that necessarily work their way into some line item in here. So I think in general we understand that you're very accepting of the draft as been presented.
Yes, it was very, very well done. Really appreciate the work and the action items identified. So,
thank you.
All right. Let's move on to committee reports. Jeff, do you have any reports?
I do have one, which is the Zone 3 Advisory Committee, and I'll start off by saying that at tomorrow's County Board of Supervisors agenda, Miriam will be brought forth as our alternate. It's on the calendar for tomorrow. So you don't have to be there.
Oh, okay.
So, is that an evening meeting?
No.
Okay.
No, it's 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. It's on the consent calendar. So.
Okay.
But the Zone 3 meeting is an evening meeting, yes, so which we actually had last Thursday. And just a couple takeaways from there is that Lopez Reservoir is filling up. It is approximately 60% full. However, so as Member Gehring mentioned, and the TAC, I believe, is having these conversations, the recommendation is not to expire the low reservoir response plan at this point as of yet, for a couple of reasons. A, because we are really only 9,000 acre feet above that limit, which we achieved somewhere about 2 to 2.5 years ago, as part of the drought. So there's a real opportunity with a dry season next winter that we start to eat into that acre feet. And then also the state still has not decided what to do overall. They've got opportunities once they make their strategy discussions. Whether to kind of roll back conservation requirements or not, but obviously the hope and the intent is that some of these conservation requirements or initiatives become lifestyle changes for folks, and so that the new normal of water use is reduced. So that'll be an item that'll come back in the probably the next several months, and then the other item that was done is approval of the budget. So there is I'll call it a robust capital improvement program that's coming forward. If you recall, the Zone 3 group accelerated a number of maintenance projects for the plant based upon the impacts from the drought, and so those are still going to be implemented. And then there's also a number of other items within there that will be beneficial to the city moving forward and just the region as a whole. So kind of interesting times, but kind of keeping kind of no significant wild swings of strategies, kind of keeping an even keel.
Mm-hmm. I have a question, mm-hmm. and I don't know if it's Zone 3 or not, but I bet you know. Greg mentioned that groundwater well levels were increasing. Do you have any idea where we are on that?
The county actually does groundwater levels in April and October.
Okay.
And so we will find out in October, and there's been a number of
October,
April. Okay. No, I'm sorry. I meant to say April. I apologize. But there was some discussion about, hey, why don't we do it in March? So why don't we do it now? And it's like, well, we don't have anything to compare it to. And so mm-hmm. the county's going to wait until April when it does its
April's
normal.
April's with April's.
Exactly. And so sometime towards the end of April, we'll know for certain, comparatively speaking, year over year.
If we can pump from our wells again.
Well, and I don't think that's we can pump now, and so it's just a matter of where they with the city strategy for that against Lopez or in comparison with Lopez. So yes, I don't think it's a matter of yes no on wells. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of safe yield of groundwater.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Okay, Barbara.
Capslow is really the only thing I have anything to report on. Capsule being the Community Action Partnership, which is a nationwide organization. They work with three different counties in their programs. And they are lobbying very heavily. The Community Action Partnership is lobbying very heavy in Washington, D.C. right now because the kind of cuts that are threatened could absolutely decimate their programs. So we're working overtime on lobbying for that. That's about it.
Okay. Debbie?
I reported last time.
That's right.
Nothing to report this time.
Okay. Miriam?
I had an HSOC meeting, and it was the first meeting we've ever gotten out early because we voted on two things that were just so clearly good ideas that it really took no time. We approved supporting the new Bringing Families Home grant to apply for it. If we got it, it might bring in, I want to say up to $800,000, but don't quote me on that, in certain situations, families can't get their kids back only because they're homeless. So that would help specifically getting those families housed. And then the other thing was we had a subcommittee on HSOC draft up a letter in support of affordable housing and just giving some specifics. And so we all supported their letter, and that's going to go to the Board of Supervisors as far as our recommendation on ways to support affordable housing for the lower incomes. And now I'm the co-chair with Jana Nichols of the Homeless Service Oversight Council, Homeless Services Coordinating Committee, HSOC Homeless Services. So HSOC, HSCC. anyway, whatever. Jana and I are the chairs of it. And one thing we talk about are the warming shelters, which we all know ours did very well. Next year, we have no location. So we're going to be having the South County Task Force meeting about that April 6th. I'm going to attend on our behalf. I think Matt's going to attend as well. Yes. So there we talked a little bit about that, and our biggest priority is going to be finding a new warming shelter for next year. Also, the MASH events are now countywide, so we're doing them all again. So they just had one in Morro Bay over the summer. They'll have one in SLO, and ours in Grover Beach is scheduled. So we're the South County, and it's the only reason it's in Grover Beach is because Hillside Church volunteered to host, and it's going to be August 29th. And if I would highly suggest, if anyone can, to stop by and just see it. It's kind of, you know, we do so much as John says, consummate volunteers, and it's really seeing like the things we vote on and the things we do helping people. And it's only one day and it should be more, but it's really, really a great event. So that's coming up. That's it.
That's great. Where's that event going to be?
It's going to be at Hillside Church, which is on Newport, just on the other side of Oak Park.
Sounds like a good location. I know you guys had you had a really good turnout last time. So.
And no issues, no problem with the neighbors or law enforcement, nothing.
Fantastic. Let's see. So Five Cities Fire Authority, the board actually just reviewed the strategic plan, which looks out about, I guess, 5 years or so, looking at areas such as technology, equipment, maintenance and upgrade. We looked at funding, and we looked at the organization and ultimately where this organization wants to be. Without getting into details, I'm going to invite Chief Lieberman to come here and give a presentation on the document so that we are all hearing it together and can ask him questions on it. Also, we did look at, basically the initial budget, and we are looking at probably about a 6% increase, and a lot of it came from some of the negotiations with the firefighters and the organization, and then also we had the purchase of two fire engines. So I will bring more details on that information as well, but let's just do it at the same meeting. The Chief Lieberman is here. And on the good front, the one fire engine that was authorized is making really good progress, and I think it's being set to be delivered in a couple of months, I believe, is where we're at. So that'll be good to have a new engine roll in. As you know, we've had challenges sort of similar to what we've had here, trucks that were well past their business life and just maintaining them to get the job done. So really good news coming out of that. But like I said, I will make sure that he comes in the next meeting or Matt and I will work on the date for that. No updates with SLOCOG. With respect to South Sand District, last week's meeting was canceled, but I do want to also invite Gerhard Hubner, the district administrator, to come and give an update on where we are with respect to some of the capital projects. There was recently an update to the bylaws, and so we'll have him come and do that. I will say, I know that you've probably either gotten calls or you'll see something in some of the papers. There are some human resource challenges that are being addressed by the district administrator, and I am not at liberty to discuss because they are personnel matters, but wanted you all to be aware of that.
So who's running the plant?
There are operators out there who are working on the plant with Mr. Hubner, and I believe he has talked to I know that he's talked. I think he is going to talk with Shannon Sweeney or someone.
Okay.
So, but I know that he sounds like he had talked to some of the others out there who have certifications and qualifications, and they are stepping up and helping out. So, okay. How about council communications? Anybody have anything?
I
I have one. Friday night at the Clark Center, 6:30, free event, Grover Heights Talent Show. Not only will you get to see my daughter play the ukulele twice, you will get to see me come out and thank everybody because I've been in charge of it since January. So, 6:30, it's free at Clark Center. And also, just wanted to let you guys know so you're not shocked when you're watching cable access that I'm going to be on Brad Pomerantz's show on Friday.
Oh, I don't get the charter. So.
So they promised me the questions are easy. So
you haven't done an interview yet.
No, I'm doing it Friday. They promised me it's easy. That's why I said I would do it.
Don't believe them.
Oh, don't say that. I'll be like easy. All stressed. So, okay, that's it.
No, it's just a rapid pace. Rapid pace.
Oh, great.
That's Hollywood for you. Anyone else have any communication?
I do have one. So,
stop it. I don't like how he's laughing. This is bad.
So, piggybacking on what Miriam said earlier with regards to the warming shelter and the fact that we're going to need a new warming shelter as of next fall, there's actually slightly a more immediate need in the fact that the Five Cities Homeless Coalition is going to need a new home. So as of the end of April, they are no longer going to be located in their facility. So the economy and some necessary improvements to the building are spurring on the owner of the building to say thank you for being here. Now go somewhere else. And so they are looking for approximately a 1,500 to 2,000 square foot facility. There is some opportunity for rent, but obviously whatever goes in towards rent doesn't go towards programs. And so the current owner of the building has been very generous with it, with his space, but obviously again. The opportunity to rent that at full market price is very attractive and very needed for that at for him at the moment. So, if anyone knows of any contacts who has a business location with that approximate square footage available, then the coalition would love to have a conversation with you.
Okay, very good. If there's no other communication, City Manager, have any reports or comments tonight?
Just two brief items. One, to again acknowledge the work of the council identifying key city goals to focus on over this next year. I thought that the process went very well with the council, and we have a set of key goals that will guide the city organization in carrying out your highest priorities over this next year. I am finalizing the goals document and tweaking the order to make sure that the list of goals by rank order within the tiers is reflected to really show the highest priority goals. I'll have this to the council here shortly. And then April 17th, we'll have the work program items back to the council for the five major city goals to get your direction for us to go forward and build us into the budget for next year. So again, thank you to the council for your work on the goal setting process. And two, we've gotten a couple letters from some of the nonprofit agencies who have asked us for some degree of funding in the past, such as SCORE and Home Share Slow and others. And just in the interest of trying to bring this to the council sooner than the budget hearing in June, I wanted to ask the council's direction and concurrence to schedule an item perhaps either April 17th or May 1st to just bring this forward to the council and have the groups come that night and be able to share their information and get the council direction to include that in the budget process so that it's not coming during the budget hearing on June the 6th. So I can work with the mayor on the scheduling of that, but I want to just bring that forward and ask for your concurrence to schedule that item sooner rather than later.
Is everyone okay with that?
Sounds like a good idea.
I think it would be. I just wonder if other people might still show up in June because that's always been the way. I don't know if that makes a difference.
They may, and they're encouraged to. I would say we should also have a conversation about a max amount. I think we kind of were going down that path, but maybe we need to formalize it because not like in the old days when we had community development block grant funds that were set around $22,000. This is coming out of general fund dollars, so we need to be disciplined.
We can include that in our council staff report.
And I think there was some, I think there was some direction that we gave last year as part of the budget conversation to kind of lead that where that's going this year. Mm-hmm. So that might be something from last year's budget discussions to bring forward.
Okay. So maybe that's something, I don't know if it's in the minutes, we can talk about that, and then we can talk about making sure these organizations go through the budget process, unless it's an emergency, a true emergency. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Can you, I was just going to give the group maybe a little update on the Lodge Conference Center.
Sure. So work is progressing on all different fronts on the Lodge project. I'll say on the conference center design, we are in the process of conducting an RFP process right now for the architectural services, building on the renderings and the preliminary designs that were developed previously. We're doing an RFP process in an expedited time period, given the overall interest in moving the project forward. The submittals will be due on April 3rd, and we will be reviewing them and bringing back a contract to the council in the month of May. On the public improvements, we are currently reviewing work from GTA, the 95% near final design. We anticipate going out to bid for construction at the end of April with the public improvement, off-site improvement contracts, and then bringing a contract for construction back to the council later this summer for this very significant set of improvements for the Lodge project. We are reviewing the plans submitted to us by the developer, and so those are part of our review process now. The financing agreements, we'll be bringing that forward to the council later this spring and summer, kind of in sequence with all these other items, because they're all coming at a time sensitivity, so that we could go to one, and then we have the other one lined up. So I'd say this spring and summer, we're going to be coming forward to the council with some very significant items on the conference center design, public improvement, financing, and other key aspects as well. And on Monday, we have another joint authority meeting between the state, our outside developer, and the city to coordinate and bring these next phases together. But overall, we're getting very close to being able to announce a groundbreaking and be able to talk about construction dates and really move forward on this big project.
Exciting news. Thank you, sir. City Attorney, any report or comments?
None this evening.
Very good. So while you have the floor, we have one closed session item tonight. Can you cover that, please?
We'll convene in a closed session on conference with real property negotiators pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8. Property is located as APN 060206029. Agency negotiators, city manager, negotiating parties, Union Pacific Railroad, regarding the price and terms and conditions of payment for a lease or acquisition.
Great, thank you. And with that, we are going to recess into closed session.